Okay, we have a forum present, and Representative Solberg, you look rather studious there. I assume you're reading the minutes.
I've researched them thoroughly, and I would move to approval.
Okay, Representative Solberg moves approval of the minutes for May 8th. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. The bill before us this morning is Senate File 276, House File 464 by Representative Sertich, dealing with the school employee statewide health insurance plan being established. Representative Sertich moves that Senate File 276, the fifth engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Some of that.
And then, Representative Sertich, you have an additional motion.
I do, Mr. Chair. I move to delete the language of Senate File 276, fifth engrossment, and insert the language from the House File 464.
Okay, that motion is before us. That puts the bill in the order that the author would like. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. One more amendment to put the bill in order. I move the H.O. 464A31 amendment. Members, it's in your packet. It just adjusts the dollar figures down to the appropriate order. It's matching up with the Senate.
Okay, that motion is before us. That's the appropriation section. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thank you for the opportunity to bring this bill before you today. This bill has been through quite a few committees. House File 464 is the School Employee Health Insurance Pool Bill. It creates an insurance pool for school employees in all school districts in the state of Minnesota. It would be run by, or would oversee the pool, would be a public corporation board made up of 14 members, 7 appointed by school employee unions, and 7 appointed by the Minnesota School Board Association. Members, this bill does multiple things. It provides coverage to all eligible employees in the state of Minnesota that work in schools. It does not affect the right of eligible employers to determine the employer's eligibility requirements. The pool must include a choice of at least 6 different health plans, going from high deductible to no deductible. Requires claims reserves, stabilization reserves, reinsurance to ensure stability. It permits the pool to be fully insured, self-insured, or a combination of the two. And requires the pool to include disease management, consumer education and wellness programs. Requires health plan companies that have provided coverage to school districts to provide non-identical claims data to the board. It bans cash in lieu payments in labor contracts entered into after June 30th of 2009, but grandfathers in existing cash in lieu payments. It requires that all premiums received by the board be used solely for the cost of operating the board and the benefit of the employees and employers. Members, the current system is not working in the state of Minnesota. Over the last 6 years, health insurance for school employees has been on the rise to the tune of 87%. The system is broke, and we need to fix it. I know there are members of the legislature, there is public, there are school districts that are concerned with this bill. I've asked them all to bring me a plan that works better. Thus far, we have not seen anything that works better. I believe getting the employers and the employees together to develop this pool for the state would help out a great deal. The Durenberger Healthcare Commission, I believe, properly demonstrated that health insurance is most effective when there are large pools. We need to be fully committed with this one. All members in at the beginning to the risk and move forward in a way. The goal of this, and I believe the healthcare committee in general, that this has been before, is affordable health care. And I believe this provides a good step into providing affordable health care for our school district employees. Mr. Chair, members, what shocked me the most is hearing about those school districts in the state of Minnesota that do not provide health insurance because they cannot afford to. It's only a handful now, but it could grow all along the way. Representative Tremba actually is talked quite passionately about that issue. If you can imagine living in rural Minnesota and having children go to school and making sure they have the best educational opportunity, a uniform education, and trying to attract a young school teacher to teach chemistry, yet you cannot provide health insurance to that school teacher, it puts you at a competitive disadvantage, you, your district, and your children, and the future of the state of Minnesota. And so with that really at the heart of this, I believe it's important to set up this pool and provide better health insurance for all our school employees. And, Mr. Chair, with that, I'm open for questions or amendments.
Okay, are there any questions before we move to amendments? Representative Hamer?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just would like Representative Sertich to briefly respond, if he could. I don't know if you want to do amendments first, but to the letter that we got from the Minnesota Department of Commerce and specifically address the points that were outlined about oversight and consumer protection. If we do go down this road, I'm sure you have had an opportunity to see it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pamela, thank you for the question. I did not bring the letter with me, but I do know I did read the letter last night when I received it. There were some concerns about the treatment of this. We're not developing a new insurance company. We're developing a new insurance pool, and this House File 464 is subject to all applicable laws and statutes of other insurance pools. It does not exempt this plan from any of that regulation. I know there's been concern about reserves, this legislation allows time for the reserves to build and accumulate. Regardless of when an insurance pool begins, claims do not happen immediately, and nor are they paid out on the first day of the pool. And I believe this, if managed properly, when it's managed properly, this pool will have the proper reserves when it's needed. And the third point, I believe, they would like ultimate veto authority over whether this plan works or not. Is something I saw in the letter, and I believe we'll have amendments to this later. Members, I believe it's our responsibility to decide whether this plan should move forward and develop this plan. I would not leave it to, and this is not to be partisan or anything else, but to leave and decide the ultimate veto authority on this plan to one appointed member of an executive branch, I think is not the proper role of the legislative branch, is to cede that authority over to them.
Mr. Chair, this is not necessarily my level of expertise, but I get concerned when we walk down a road where experts are telling us that we should have a significant amount of assets in reserve, and what appears that this plan has no assets, and you're saying, well, that will build. And I don't want to see the state in a position where we're liable for a plan that may become problematic in the future. And I guess I'd just like you to address that. I would like you to address that. I don't guess.
Thank you, Mr. Sheriff St. Pamar. I agree with you, but at the same time, it's very much chicken and egg. How do you get full assets before the plan starts? Really, some of the models run based on if everybody were to have a claim, would this be able to have appropriate amount of assets? Not everyone is going to have a claim on day one. This plan is going to go out and work with insurance companies immediately and have a combination and move towards being fully funded on their own, but also utilize insurance companies on the front end who have assets. So I believe that by the time it's fully developed, they will have the appropriate assets that are necessary.
Final question, Mr. Chair. So it seemed, though, that the department was offering some suggestions and on page 2 of the letter. And will these issues be addressed?
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Pamer, as I said, I did not bring the letter with me, so I'm not sure which portions of that you're talking about.
Is this the letter? Was the letter with us, Mr. Chair? Do we have this from Commissioner Wilson?
Did you give us the email? They're just checking. I didn't get a letter, nor did the committee staff get the letter, so I'm not sure who it was sent to. Apparently you got one. Some did, and some must not have. The office did. Trustee Paymar, did you have another question?
No, if he doesn't have the letter, if the committee doesn't have the letter, it's not very helpful.
Well, if you'd like to have a copy made, we can do that. Perhaps everybody would have the letter in question, I guess. It'll be with us shortly. Representative Paymar, did you have any additional?
Thank you.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sertich, where is this type of a pool being used in other states?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm not entirely sure that there's an identical pool to this. There are other pools actually in other states. New Jersey comes to mind right away that actually had an opt-in, opt-out provision in there. It was not successful with that provision, and California has some pools that are similar that have run into trouble. But for this specific pool, I'm not aware of anyone who has this identical pool involved in their state.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sertich, so where, how did this all come together? Who proposed it? What pieces did you, where did you get the model to make it happen, or what you would like to see happen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, actually this came from the good work of the Minnesota State Legislature. We appropriated, I'm guessing it's been at least 5 years ago now, a study for that to happen, working with all sides of this issue from education to come forward with a plan, and this is the framework of that. But the employers and employees that would be elected to this board to oversee it would still have to come up with the identical pool. Or at the actual pool of what it would look like. So this is really just the framework still. They would have to come up with the particulars and put them in place. But this has been studied by the state of Minnesota in the early 2000s, and this bill has been around for a little while. Actually, Representative Davids carried it previous sessions.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Sertich, why didn't this bill go through the education committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, this bill deals primarily with health insurance and not education specific. I could give you a couple examples. When we've had issues dealing with unemployment benefits for Northwest Airlines employees, it doesn't go through the Transportation Committee. It goes through the committee dealing with unemployment benefits. This deals with insurance. It's been through all the committees dealing with insurance. But educators and the education community have been involved from day one in all the health committees that has went through. We've received hours of testimony from insurance providers, school board associations, education unions, service employee unions, you name it. So they've all been at the table discussing this in the health committees.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, President Sertich, where does the MREA stand on this bill?
The MREA? You'd have to ask the MREA.
I'm going to take one more person on the list, and then we'll move to amendments. We have a whole lot of amendments. So Representative Finstead, and then I'll just start taking amendments after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sertich, in your opening comments, you talked that this bill ensures stability and provides affordable health care for school employees. That sounds great. Can you tell me how this bill specifically does that? What, beyond the soundbite of those good-sounding words, how does this bill provide that?
Representative Carlson, Representative Finstead, I believe I said it should, and hopefully it will. If you just look at the Durenberger Health Commission, Healthcare Commission, it talks about the ability of large schools to provide that stability and help out with the cost of health care. And Representative Finstead, 87% increase over the last 6 years. Status quo is not working, so it's my idea, and not just mine alone, but others have come forward to say, status quo isn't working, we need to try something new. We believe this pool will hopefully provide that structure.
Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then you mentioned in your opening comments about there'll be six different plans offered. And I guess that goes to my first question, because you talked about ensuring stability, providing affordable health care. You know, that all sounds great. What are the six plans that will be offered then, and what are the price tags for those plans? I mean, is it truly something that we know right now that we can talk about openly, what the plans are, what they include, what it will cost?
Mr. Chair, Representative Finstead, no, we do not, because this group of employers and employees are going to decide what those six plans are, but they'll be across the spectrum from high deductible to no deductible, reflecting really what's happening in individual districts right now. Different districts have different plans, and we want to make sure that they have a similar plan that can be offered in their district, and I believe that that is helpful in the flexibility here. Members, I know there are districts that do not like this idea, but I think insurance premium spikes are not alone to small rural districts. Nobody's immune from them. And there are many school districts, because of the employers, employees, and the insurance they have right now, that are doing a great job today. But they're not immune to the spikes of costs down the road. And I believe this plan will help into the future. Took a snapshot today. Folks might say, this plan isn't good for me, but you never know if a school district has a heart attack or a stroke or about a breast cancer in their pool away from seeing those same spikes that other districts have.
As I mentioned earlier, we've got about 20 amendments, and I said I would recognize Representative Finstead and then move to amendments. Others of you, as we go through the amendments, will probably have a chance to comment if you would like. First amendment that I have is H.O. 464A14 by Representative Westrum. I know you've just arrived. Are you prepared to offer your amendment? Just happens to be the top of the file.
Mr. Chair, if I could pass till the next one, I got to look, get my computer started.
The next one is virtually identical to yours, so maybe you can. That's by Representative Coles, SO 2768 3. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the amendment and ask for a roll call.
Okay, the amendment has been moved and a roll call has been requested. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members, Representative Sertich, I have had concerns about the policy here since it was first introduced by Representative Davids some time ago, maybe even my first year here. I know that school districts across the state, not rural districts, not metro districts, not suburban districts, but across the state have had varying experience with their health insurance premiums and their health insurance plans. Representative Sertich, there is nothing in your bill, at least nothing that I can see in the bill, that will prevent the spikes that you were just talking about in response to Representative Finstead's question in the future if we go to this statewide plan. One of the big concerns I have with the bill as it's currently proposed is that it is mandatory. And I can tell you that the school districts I represent are opposed to being forced by the state to enter into a mandatory plan. I've heard, I believe, from almost every single teacher in the Watertown School District, they're adamantly opposed to being forced to enter into this statewide plan. They have, school districts across the state have employed various methods to control, attempt to control health care costs. And as you know, Representative Sertich, there was an actuarial study that was done, I believe, 4 or 5 years ago that concluded, the impressive conclusion was that this may work. This may work. Not it will, but it may. That actuarial study also showed that if this plan is adopted, there will be, in the early years, winners and losers. Some school districts' premiums will go up as a result of joining the plan. Others will go down. I can tell you the school districts that I represent, and I'm certainly not alone, are all losers in the early years. Whether they'll be winners or whether things will be better in the out years, Representative Sertich, you're right. They can't predict that today, but they can't predict that any better with this plan. So what the amendment does, members, is it makes the plan voluntary. It allows school districts to opt out. It retains some essence of local control. It doesn't make any changes to the bill other than that. It allows school districts that want to participate to participate. And it gives the option to districts that don't an option to opt out. I don't think that we ought to be marching down the road of forcing all of our school districts across the state, regardless of their local circumstances, regardless of their local claims history, regardless of how they've been made up, to join into a mandatory pool. There are all kinds of options out there for school districts right now, and one size doesn't fit all, and that's what your bill is trying to do, Representative Sirdis, at least from my perspective. So, members, I would move the amendment. We ought to give our local school districts the opportunity to choose whether or not they want to participate in this mandatory plan. You know, should we offer a larger pool? Sure. Should we force it down our local school districts' throats? Absolutely not. Members, I'd move the amendment.
Okay, I think you've moved it three times now, but that's
I'm thinking, Mr. Chair, that maybe three roll calls. If the first one doesn't work, we'll keep going.
We'll probably with just one roll call, but Representative Coles apparently wanted to make sure he moved the amendment. Representative Sirdis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Coles. Right now we do have basically pools, voluntary pools, and it's not working. There are winners and losers today. Members I spoke before of New Jersey who had a voluntary pool, which is probably the most recent example of having a voluntary pool, had a very negative result for their state and their school districts and ultimately for the teachers and students. Members, the best way for this to work is for everyone to be involved in the plan. If you have an opt-out provision, locals may not choose to enter the pool right away, but when their experience ratings spike, then they would potentially want to come into the pool. That would have a severe impact on the pool already. I believe all should have the same risk. As to our local control, that goes back, I think, to Representative Finstead's question of having six distinct different plans that would be able to be offered flexibility for local school districts. So, Mr. Chair, I'd encourage a no vote on the Coles Amendment.
Okay. Clerk, take the roll.
Mr. Chairman, I have my hands raised. I'm sorry.
On this amendment?
Yes.
Well, you were on the list earlier, but okay, Representative, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was sitting
here.
There you go.
I was sitting here
saying right or not. And Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I actually have a school group going, so I'm going to be leaving and coming back. But one of the concerns I have, and I'll be the first to admit, is that I don't have expertise in the healthcare area. And a question I've asked a lot of people, and I have not gotten the answer to this, and whether Representative Sirdis or maybe Representative Thiessen or Representative Walker can answer this. I understand the concept of how pooling provides a lower total cost of ownership. I get that. That makes sense. But for a lot of us, the big issue is the mandatory versus voluntary provisions. And the way it's been explained to me is that, well, if we just have a voluntary pool, what happens is sort of the bottom feeders, the high cost ones, are going to be the people who are going to opt in and out of the pool. It's going to drive up costs, and it's not going to make things cost beneficial. And I understand that. I get that point. The question I've asked several people is that we have an existing pool right now. It's the state employees pool. There's 120,000 people in it. We have that lower cost of ownership. We have that total reserves that are in existence. Can somebody, whether it's Representative Sirdis, Representative Thiessen, Representative Walker, someone with healthcare experts, can someone explain to me why we wouldn't voluntarily offer to school districts the opportunity to voluntarily join the state pool, the same health insurance that I have, that everyone at this table has, to deliver those savings? And I don't like asking questions I don't know the answers to, but that's one I actually would like an answer to.
Mr. Chair, if I could. I'm no health expert, but I'm glad to see Representative Garofalo proposing socialized medicine, because I'm with him on that.
Mr. Chairman, I'm pretty sure I didn't say that, but
I've
done dumber things before, Representative Rukavina. So, no, but in Representative Thiessen, if I could pick on you, maybe. I mean, you're chair of a health committee. I understand the total cost of ownership and the administrative savings. We have a pool set up for state employees right now, and literally I've asked this question 30 times and I've never gotten an answer to it. Why wouldn't we give the school district employees the voluntary option of joining the existing statewide pool?
what is the downside to it?
Representative Thiessen, did you want to respond to that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, you know, I think a lot of these issues have been explored and unsuccessfully in the past. I don't know the specific answer to your question. To the amendment specifically, though, I mean, what this amendment would do is kind of part of what you just talked about, which is creating really a huge incentive for adverse selection and creating a very, very sick pool. And so I would really speak against this amendment, which I don't think that Representative Garofalo's question particularly is pertinent to, but I don't know the particular answer to your question.
Representative Garofalo. Mr. Chairman, the reason why I'm bringing up in this discussion is I'm actually, and Mr. Representative Coles, my apologies for not speaking to you in advance about this, but I was considering tacking that provision onto his amendment. That's why I'm bringing this up now. And perhaps that should just be an amendment later on, but in part of this overall discussion, Representative Sertich, you mentioned your in the comments earlier regarding the streamlining, and I understand that. Mr. Chairman, would it be possible to have the advocates for the bill just offer some insight on... I'm not going to get the amendment drafted and go through the trouble of it if there's fierce opposition to it. If there's stuff I don't know, I understand health care is very complex.
I don't remember if that amendment's here or not. We've got 21 now. I would be surprised if it's not somewhere in the packet, but I'm not positive. Is that amendment in the...
Mr. Chairman, can we
know if they're going to offer that?
Mr. Chairman, I see the...
Graflo. I have Representative Huntley, I think, that wanted to respond when you asked a couple of members generally. So, Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I actually had a bill one time to put all public employees and their families in one pool, which wouldn't be a bad thing to do. I think the problem with putting in the state employees pool is we would have to negotiate with the state employees as to whether they wanted them in their pool, and I'll give you an example why they don't want them in their pool. The cost of health insurance for a family in the state health plan is about $12,000 a year. The Robbinsdale School District is currently about $20,000 a year for a family. So why would the state employees want a group like that mixed in with them so that they'd have to pay part of that cost?
Representative Raffel. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hunley, excellent point. My question would be, why would the school teachers of Lakeville want their health insurance pulled with the people from the teachers from Robbinsdale? And I see the advocate from the lobbyist for Education Minnesota is here. Can we get her insights on this matter? And again, this is a very short discussion, Mr. Chairman. I do have to leave, so.
Yeah, I would encourage members to keep things short because we have 21 amendments, and who would like to respond? What I've announced is that we would have people available for questions, but because the bill has been through a number of committees, that we would try to limit the discussion to the amendments before us. But Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I received the note, and this isn't my ultimate area of expertise, either Representative Garofalo, but there's an issue of federal funds being partially used for state employees, and quite honestly, some of the handwriting I cannot read. but that's how it starts. And glasses, I don't think are going to help Representative Swigum for me either on this one.
Is the writer of the note behind you?
Potentially. Let's try that out.
Maybe that's the quickest way, being that it is a question, and if you could respond.
My name is Lee Johansson. I'm with Education Minnesota. Chairman Carlson, Representative Garofalo. I sat in on a briefing from the state employee group about 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago. It was one of those briefings that was canceled because the House had worked late. I think it was rescheduled. But the manager of the state plan, or the chief negotiator, I guess it was, pointed out that under the regulations that the state insurance group is under, only a de minimis number of non-state employees can be mingled with state employees, or there's some loss of federal funding. And at the end of that, I asked him, would 200,000 lives be de minimis? And his answer was no.
Mr. Chairman? Representative Garofalo. Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier, How about, again, focusing on the issue of overall total cost pool, and just truth and disclosure, again, healthcare is not my expertise. How about MnCare? What about putting them into the MnCare pool?
Representative Graffel, I'm not particularly familiar with the MnCare pool. What I would hesitate to jump into that. What I do know is that we've gone down several avenues attempting to find partners, and in the end, as Representative Sertich pointed out, 85 to 87% increases over the last 6 years, while people have been throwing out ideas and not coming up with solid proposals. We can no longer wait.
Okay. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Your questions aren't necessarily on this amendment. That's why I'm trying to move you along a little bit. But Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your patience. Literally, I'll be out of here in 2 minutes, so I'm not stretching this out. My questions were pertaining to the issue of the voluntary versus mandatory, and I guess if we're going to I don't think there's an amendment coming later on the idea that I just discussed about putting people into the state employee.
Apparently not. No one.
Okay. So I'll defer a comment on that. And just getting back to the original amendment, I think Chairman Huntley stated it best that I think the number used is that state employees are $12,000 a year for if it was a family or policy number. And for the Robbinsdale School District, he said $20,000 a unit. And I have to assume there are school districts out there that right now have lower numbers than other school districts. And the analogy they made for Robbinsdale is perfect for the school districts in my area, where within my own legislative district, there are districts that would do well and districts that would do poorly. And at the very least, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, I would support the Coles Amendment and say that this should be a choice that's left up for local school boards. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And the clerk will take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Cornish?
Aye.
Earhart? Vinstead?
Yes.
Graffalo?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hausman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Howes?
No.
Huntley?
No.
Yaros?
No.
Chunky?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Cools?
Aye.
Leader? Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Otremba?
No.
Tamar?
No.
Klowski?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Poppy?
Yes.
Riccovino?
No.
Sailor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Thurditch?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Flawick?
Yes.
Solberg?
No.
Wiggum?
No.
Thiessen?
No.
Wagenius?
Yes.
Walker?
No.
Westrom?
Yes. Earhart, of course, yes.
What's it doing
to you? Yeah.
What's it doing
to you?
Oh, okay, being 23 no's and 14 yeses, motion is defeated. Representative Solberg, do you have an amendment? Representative Solberg, do you have an amendment?
Yes, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. It's a handwritten amendment. And
it's been distributed.
I would move the amendment and call upon Mr. Marks to
this is
the clarification.
This is one that either Representative Solberg sharp eyes or Mr. Marks.
Sharp eyes.
Oh, it's Mr. Marks. Okay, Mr. Marks. Apparently, we have to change the wording on the appropriation a bit. So, Mr. Marks, if you could explain what the amendment is.
Mr. Chair, the language in the bill that says base appropriation for this program is I think it's questionable. For one, could question whether that actually appropriates the money or not. It establishes that the base appropriation is a number, but it's not active in the sense of appropriating the money. So that's the reason for the proposed change to make it clear that money is appropriated.
Okay, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, that's the handwritten amendment.
That's correct.
Yeah. Did we do the Certex K31 already?
That's right. So
it fits on the amended version. Good.
Yeah, that's why we're exactly, yeah. Okay. And any further discussion? Hearing none, then. All those in favor of the Solberg amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. Motion carried. Representative Westrum, you have an amendment in the packet that's virtually identical the one we just voted on, Representative Westrum.
Well, what I've got another one that's similar but is some different, the A29 amendment, and if it's appropriate, I would move that now if you want to wait.
It hasn't been passed out, but
it hasn't.
Do it later.
Okay,
then.
I'll withdraw the A14 right now.
Okay. And that would bring us to one by Representative Coles, the SO276A7. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move the amendment. I'll try to only do it once this time.
You're not as enthusiastic then.
No, Mr. Chair, I'll just urge members to report three or four times during my introduction or explanation of the amendment. Mr. Chair, members, I would urge your support of the A7 amendment. What it would do, it would require that, it's very simple. What it says, the board may not offer any plan until the Commissioner of Commerce has certified that it is actuarially sound. I don't think that this should be terribly controversial. As I understand it, there are six plans that will be available under the statewide mandatory pool if it does become law. No plan. The amendment would provide that the Commerce Department has to certify, as it does with all insurance policies right now, that they're actuarially sound before they're before they are offered in the state of Minnesota. This is, I think, Representative Kamar, one of the consumer protection type issues that you raised earlier. The Department of Commerce has the expertise. They do this now. It's required for insurance issued in the state. We don't want plans, whether it's health insurance or auto insurance or anything else, we don't want plans that aren't actuarially sound. If we have plans that aren't actuarially sound, we run the risk of an insolvency, and then we'll all be sitting around this table trying to figure out how we're going to bail them out. And whether that's through some type of a guarantee fund issue or whether there's an appropriation from the legislature, the end result is that your constituents and mine, either through taxes or through higher insurance premiums, are going to pay for any insolvency that happens. This is one way to try to prevent insolvencies. I think this is something we should be concerned about, not just for this plan, but for all the insurance that's issued in the state of Minnesota. I don't think it's terribly controversial. I don't think it should be. I don't think it's as controversial as the opt-in, opt-out. And I hope that members will support the amendment.
Representative Sturdage.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd encourage a no vote on the Coles amendment. As I stated before, I'm most concerned, not in particular about any particular commissioner, but that this would be held up for any other reason. If the employers and the employees develop a plan that works, that makes sense, and I don't want to see the bureaucracy get in the way of that.
Mr. Chairman, very briefly, just to respond to that, Representative Sturdage, I don't think that you would have the same position on any other insurance plan that's offered in the marketplace. I suspect that you would want the Department of Commerce to make sure that our auto policies are actuarially sound, our life policies are actuarially sound, our various commercial lines property policies are actuarially sound. It doesn't have anything to do with the politics of a particular administration. It has everything to do with the solvency of the plans that are being offered and that are ensuring the teachers and other education staff throughout the state of Minnesota. I'm disappointed that you're opposing the amendment. I would ask for a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Figham.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Curtis, while I'm supportive of this bill, I like the vision. I think your response to this amendment is wrong and inappropriate. So why, tell me again, go a little deeper.
Sure.
Why would you not want a plan to be, I don't know what actuarial soundness means, I assume it means the appropriate amount of reserves, I assume it means the appropriate amount of premium being charged for the plan. Why would you not want to make sure that is done for the teachers in my district, in your district, in the state? Your response is lacking.
Okay.
Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative Segem, I will go deeper to that point. I'm assuming what's going to happen with this is that this pool is going to partner with an insurance company right away, which will have huge reserves, and then they're going to transform to their own reserves or a combination of so over time. And any commissioner, I'm not picking on a sitting commissioner, or just Commissioner X could decide that doesn't mean they're actuarially sound enough, but they don't have reserves on day one. Maybe they're using a different insurance company at the beginning or combining it. And so I'm hesitant because of the language here that a commissioner can just decide what is actuarially sound or not. I mean, you and I may have a different definition of that, Representative Coles and anyone around this table, and any commissioner of commerce may have a different definition of what actuarially sound means. And I would hate to see this bill not become law and the pool not happen if they have a different definition of what that is.
Representative Sturge, what is one of the roles, the responsibility? I would think the role or responsibility of a Department of Commerce or a commissioner in this case would be to just make sure that there is actuarial soundness. Are you undermining the role of the department or of the commissioner?
Under accepted.
Mr. Sheriff, Mr. Sturgeon, I absolutely do not want to do that. And they check out insurance companies. This is an insurance pool, which is somewhat different. I would have more comfort if I knew that there was a definitive answer of what actuarially sound is. Because as I've seen around here, that definition means something different to different people around the table.
Mr. Chairman, is that like definition of
demand
or something?
Could be.
Well, we've got several hands up. Representative Thun.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't have an amendment, but I would like to suggest before this gets to the next step that people look. There is language, I think, that could be used in Chapter 356A, which is public pension plan fiduciary responsibility. And I would think the idea that you set up, any plan set up would have to have a fiduciary agent that met the characteristics of Chapter 356A might be a way to go, and it might be a way to not have the not have the Commissioner of Finance make an arbitrary decision. But we do have language in statutes that uses words that are much better than just actuarially sound. So I don't have an amendment written now to do that, but I would suggest people look at 356A.
Representative Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there must be certain accepted actuarial practices that we should include here. CPAs, actuaries, all have accepted practices for their profession, and to just ignore them is ridiculous. Thank you.
Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I'm thinking this question might be for somebody from the Department of Commerce, but do they not have a process of evaluating pools or insurance products right now that are actuarially sound? From some of the discussion we've had, they require this, or we require this, of other insurance products sold in the state of Minnesota. I'm just curious, maybe somebody from the department could tell us if there's a definition of actuarially sound, or maybe they've never done this, and if that's the case, then we're in new waters, and if they have, maybe we either repeal all those requirements, or there's a reason we're doing it now. Somebody from the department could answer that question.
Representative Sturge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrum, if I could take a first swing at that. There's a difference between selling a product in the state of Minnesota and creating an insurance pool. As I stated before, that this bill falls within the letter of the law of regulations of an insurance pool, but they're not an insurance company. There's a difference there.
Mr. Chairman, to that point, very
briefly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sturge, I just encourage you to read the amendment. The amendment doesn't deal with the pool. The amendment deals with the plans offered by the pool, inside the pool. It's not about the creation of the pool. It's about the individual plans that are offered by the pool and ensuring that they're actuarially sound. We want to make sure that the plans inside the pool, if this is created, aren't at risk, at any greater risk than any other health insurance being offered out there for insolvency.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, heeding the advice also of Representative Kahn as far as taking out the judgment call of this and maybe looking at a different area of law, I committed to working to see if we can develop good language on this. There's a few more stops on the road before this even gets to the floor, and we can definitely look at that.
Mr. Chair, if somebody is from the Department of Commerce, I guess I'm not satisfied totally with Representative Sertich's answer, and I'm just thinking maybe they would have better insight on what kind of oversight we have on pools or plans within a pool.
It looks like Representative Westrum, somebody's coming forward. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Gross. I'm the Director of Healthcare Policy for the Minnesota Department of Commerce. If an insurance company, HMO, et cetera, wants to get licensed to assume healthcare risk or any type of risk in Minnesota, we look at the company from an actuarial standpoint of, it's called risk-based capital. You look at the type of risk that the company is going to assume, and then you look at the necessary capital that this entity would have to have. It's found in Chapter 68. And, for example, if the company was in this, assuming 200,000 lives, $1 billion in claims like the pool is going to create, you would have to have, in a very ultra-conservative standpoint, $150 million in reserves and surplus. If the company was only providing, let's say, vision care or some kind of $1,000 dental policy, then the company would have to have substantially lower amount of capital. So it really depends on the risk that the company is going to assume as to how comfort the Commerce Department would ever be. The other thing you have to put into the play here is the other entities that this group will assume. I mean, what I mean by that is simply this. We look at all the parts and pieces that this entity will have to have. For example, you want to have a very good, very thorough entity that provides claim service. So they make sure that the proper amount of claims are properly paid. The entity would certainly want to have some kind of a network of providers with a deep, deep discount, so their costs are low. And when you put all these pieces into play, then the Commerce Department looks at all those pieces and says, all right, $150 million is the ultra-conservative thing, but maybe we can bring it down considerably because you do have less costs with your deep discount provider network. You have an administrator that is very thorough at looking at claims. You have stop-loss coverage that will come in and pay those large, huge, humongous claims. So we look at all those aspects of any entity that wants to assume healthcare risk. The last thing I'd like to say to you is our director that in our financial section, Jackie Gardner, has always said, not on her watch does she want any entity to fail. So our goal is to make sure that all entities in Minnesota, whatever type of risk they're assuming, is financially sound. If that, you know, if the entity does fail, you can have all kinds of immense problems for the consumer. All the entities that we currently license have to meet this criteria. Now, this group wants to create something a little bit different, and we're concerned from the aspect of solvency, primarily.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Westrum,
Mr. Gross, is that your name?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrum, yes, sir.
Mr. Gross, so do we not? It sounds from your answer that we do some actuarial evaluation of other policies that are being offered, or do we not? Do we not do this for some policies out there? Is there? Or what would be the correct terminology that Representative Sertich is concerned that the actuarially sound language in the amendment is vague or not described well enough? Is there another term that is more standard, as Representative Earhart said? There's standard processes in
insurance actuarial math. Is there a different way we should be calling this? Because it sounds to me like you're doing this on all other policies, or do we not have some policies that we are concerned about this?
Mr. Gross. Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, you're correct. We look at all entities, all products, to look at on the same level to make sure that, for example, the insurance policy delivers its benefits and that the company has the necessary capital to assume that risk, to pay the claims.
So to my other part of the question, Mr. Chair, is there a different term we should be using than actuarially sound? Is there a more descriptive way to describe what the department already does?
Gross. Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, that's a good term. It's depending on, like, if we were discussing here previously, and each person can come up with a different interpretation of what that means, but it's a general term that I think is used throughout the industry.
So, last question, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gross, what you've got that same discretion on all the other policies you evaluate now, or is that an absolute hard formula that you have to evaluate it against?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, it's identical for all.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What confuses me about this discussion we're having is what I hear the department saying is the express value is that no entity fails. And that, I think, is the system we have in place now, that clear sense of measuring that no entity fails. But the outcome of that for people and families is that the product is no longer affordable. That is what we're hearing, those kinds of stories all over the state. And I believe that's what the bill is trying to get at today. So when I hear that our kind of highest value is a department that says we're going to be sure no entity fails, without the question about the outcome, is healthcare with that value affordable, available and affordable? And what I'm seeing is this disconnect between the stories we're hearing and the system in place.
Did you want Mr. Gross to respond to that?
Just an observation about my confusion about the express value of no entity failing in the context of the problem this bill is trying to solve.
Okay, Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to the amendment before us very quickly, and picking up on what Representative Cole said and the Commerce Department, it's clear to me, at least listening to this, that anyone who's licensed to sell insurance plans in the state of Minnesota has to get a license from the Commerce Department, has to be sound financially, and this amendment's totally unnecessary. They already have to do that, Representative Coles. You said you're talking about insurance plans selling in Minnesota. That's what your amendment says with plan. If you're talking about a self-insured pool, that's another deal. I don't know if ConAgra out of Omaha, where I used to work, if they look at self-insured companies and do that. But clearly, you stated your concern, and Representative Sertich said, they're going to look at 5 or 6 plans that will sell and be licensed to sell in Minnesota. There's no reason for this because Commerce already licensed them and makes sure that they are actuarially sound.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coles.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, you need to read the language of the bill. The language of the bill says the board must include, and this is the board, the school health plan board, the board must include claims reserves, stabilization reserves, reinsurance, other features that in the judgment of the board, not the Department of Commerce. So what this bill would allow to happen, I'm going to pick on Health Partners. Health Partners is licensed to do business in the state of Minnesota, but if they want to offer a product, they got to get that product approved by the Department of Commerce. They don't under this bill. They got to get it approved by the board. And they're not required, the board's not required to ensure that it's actuarially sound. They got to take into consideration the reserves and whatnot. Health Partners is licensed, but they're not required that whatever product they create to deal with this plan is not required to be approved by the Department of Commerce. And as Mr. Gross explained, it's a two-part thing. We got to make sure that the entity is solvent, but the individual plan has an absolute relationship to the ongoing solvency of the entity. That's why this is so important, Representative Junkie. It's not unnecessary. It's absolutely necessary if we're going to ensure the ongoing stability of these health insurance entities for the consumers in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, just briefly to respond, Mr. Chair, and again, I think it's a chicken or egg thing, Representative Coles. You're reading it one way. I'm reading it another way. Commerce Department licenses everyone who sells a product in this state, and they will continue to do that. The board is recommending which one of those plans they would like to incorporate, but that entity has to be licensed to sell in the state of Minnesota by the Commerce Department. This is unnecessary.
Representative Severson.
I'm sorry, I'll pass.
Okay, Representative Seifert. And then,
Mr. Chair,
that represents Seifert and Finstead, and I'd like to call on the author of the bill, and we've got 19 amendments to go, so we'll vote after Representative Seifert, Finstead, and Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Finstead, I guess. No. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Representative Seifert. Yeah.
Thank you.
Specifically to this point.
Representative Kahn.
This is line, and this is either Representative Sertich or Representative Holesmore. What about the language? Isn't the language in your amendment covered by the language on 310? It says, all health plans offered must be approved by the Department Commissioner of Commerce. How does that differ?
You're posing that to
Representative Coles, I guess.
Yeah.
Or Representative Sertich, who's ever answering questions. I don't know anything about this bill. I'm asking these people who seem to know a lot about
Coles
it.
Do.
Mr. Chairman, maybe Mr. Gross from the department could comment on that. I think Representative Kahn's raised an interesting point. I'm not sure how that relates to the language on 313 to 318. I guess I'd be interested, Mr. Gross. Maybe I've unfortunately wasted the committee's time, which is not my intent here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cole, Representative Kahn. Based on line 310, the Commerce Department gets to approve the six different plans that the board or this pool will create. The Commerce Department does not get to approve the making sure that this pool has an adequate amount of reserve, surplus, etc.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess my question then to Mr. Gross to help answer Representative Kahn's question is the amendment that I've offered, the A7 amendment, helpful to do that? Would the A7 amendment give the Commerce Department the ability to make sure that the reserves and whatnot are adequate?
Mr. Chairman, it would give us indirectly the authority to do that because we would approve the policy forms and then we would make sure that the entity itself is financially sound to assume that risk.
In light of that, Mr. Chair, I think Representative Kahn, it's important. I didn't think this was that controversial. I'm not trying to. I want to make sure that these plans are. If we're offering these plans, I want to make sure they continue to be solvent. I don't see what the controversy is there. It's not intended to blow this thing up. So I apologize for the time we're taking, but I do want to still offer the amendment to Mr. Gross's testimony, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Seifert.
Sorry.
He left.
Okay.
No, or where? Oh, there he is. Okay, we have Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sertich, you talked about, you assume that this pool will partner with the insurance company with reserves to kind of curb the fear of insolvency and the pool running into problems. Now, you said you assume this will happen. What is the overall plan? Is the plan for the pool to work with an insurance company to offer plans and then at some point become self-insured? What is the overall goal? Because if it is truly to become self-insured, then I think this amendment is something that we should address at this point, because then the solvency question truly does come into play.
Mr. Chair, Representative Finstead, I that is just one suggested idea. I am not going to put limits on what the employers and employees will come up with what is best for them and best for the employees as far as health insurance goes. That's my assumption of what could and might happen, is that gradual from working with insurance companies to becoming health or self-insured, and it's written into the language as well. Members, if I could just be specific again, this bill does not exempt the pool from any requirements in existing rules or regulations. And I think Representative Kahn has pointed out a piece within this bill, but if you look in the statute anywhere, it does not exempt this pool from any requirements that are already existing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, with the uncertainty and the assumptions being made by the author that the pool would work with plans and then maybe become self-insured at some point, I think this is a great amendment just for consumer protection. So I would ask people to vote for this.
Representative Solberg is next.
Mr. Chair, maybe I can add a little bit of light to this. I participated with your mayor of Bovee. There were five different entities that had a governance of a pool. It was both municipalities and school districts involved in it. And the pool, called ProCare at the time, and still is still functioning, bought insurance, negotiated insurance plans from insurance companies. We were never subject, the pool itself was never subject to review because there wasn't any particular insurance plan. It was purchasing from others. Also, I think under state law right now, if you are self-insured, that is exempt from the regulation, as I understand. But the pool itself, as I understand, is going to be purchasing. So the ProCare pool that I participated in as a board member never went to the Commerce Committee to see if we were solvent. We didn't have any assets. We were purchasing it from other particular entities, other insurance companies that were regulated by the Commerce Department.
Okay, Representative Westrom.
Well, Chair, just in light of Representative Kahn's comments and Representative Sertich, it's of your opinion that the current language in the bill gives the Commerce Department the actuarial oversight to make sure a plan is sound that's being purchased by this pool anyways? Is that your plan, so the Department of Commerce would, in 3 months, if this passed the floor and the governor signs it, they're going to have this power anyways? Is that that's your thought, or based on this language of the bill right now?
Representative
Sertich. Chair, Representative Westrom, on page 3, line 10, all health plans offered must be approved by the Commissioner of Commerce. That's a pretty direct statement with a must in there. So I believe that the Department of Commerce and the Commissioner are going to be playing a role in this.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, that wasn't an exact answer to my question. You think they have the role of making sure this is actually sound or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, I believe they have to approve the plans as far as actuarially sound. Once again, I don't want to have this set down to a judgment call. As I stated earlier when we started to discuss this amendment, I'd be more than welcome to look at language that Representative Kahn was discussing. The bill does have a few more stops on the road to see if there's a better way to describe that, to move it beyond a judgment call.
Representative Kahn, I think by the answer I've been getting, there must be a need for this amendment because you seem to conclude that the language is already in there to give the Department of Commerce actuary oversight to make sure it's sound as part of their approval of the plan. I'm not getting that exact answer from Representative Sertich, and so there seems to be a little vagueness, and probably will be up to the department's discretion over the summer and future months then anyways, because the language has enough vagueness they can probably exercise this oversight according to your observation, and they choose who they can. If they don't, and the plan isn't actually sound, we haul them in here in 2 years or 5 years or 10 years and say, why didn't you exercise more oversight? They'll probably say, well, you didn't give us specific direction to do that. I'm not sure. It seems to me that maybe this language would be good comfort language to augment what Representative Kahn says is already in the bill.
Representative Hussman?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gross, would you approve any health plan that was not actuarially sound?
Mr. Gross?
Mr. Chairman, the bill itself, if you look at subdivision 4, Part D, is specifically talking about the policy itself, the policy that provides health care coverage to the enrollee, and it's specifically requiring that policy to comply with current state health care mandates. And it's talking specifically about the benefits that the policy provides. So when you talk about in that aspect of actuarial sound, we would look at the policies, benefits, and we would also look at the premiums the policy is going to incorporate to make sure that the premiums are adequate to provide those specific benefits. And so we're looking specifically in subdivision 4, clause D, the policy, its benefits, and from that aspect, the policy rates, et cetera, being actuarial sound.
Mr. Chair, I was just looking at the language that said all health plans offered must be approved by the Commissioner of Commerce, and that apparently would be how you would arrive at that approval, what you just laid out.
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've been talking about the plans issued by a company called the Minnesota School Employees Insurance Board. Do you have sufficient jurisdiction given by this bill to make certain that the company is sound? You're talking about the plans all the time. But more basic to that is you're creating a new insurance entity here. If any other insurance company comes in here, you're going to make sure that they're sound in other ways than the plans they're issuing are important. But the new company that's being created here, the public corporation, do you feel satisfied that you have a sufficient jurisdiction over the establishment of that company?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, no, we don't have any jurisdiction over the entity itself. We have the only jurisdiction we have over is the policies that the entity will offer, but we don't have any jurisdiction at all with the entity itself.
Well, Mr. Chairman, they're asking for reserves be established from the public coffers, I think, in here, insufficient, according to what you were saying, to satisfy what good actuarial practices would require. So who is to speak to that? $5 million, and you were saying $150 million might be more appropriate.
Representative Fink.
Mr. Chairman, members, this one is not that hard. Very, very honestly, it's not that hard. Put the doggone amendment on. If Mr. Guckey and Ms. Kahn are correct and say that it could be duplicative, no big deal. It's not the first time we've put something in language that's duplicative. If it's not duplicative and you certainly want to make these plans actuarial sound, it's important language to have there to make sure the system works for the employees, for the premiums, for the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. It's not that hard. Put the doggone thing on. Let's get on to Amendment 3.
Out of 19 more to go.
Well.
Representative Kahn.
You know, Mr. Chairman, I guess we're going to repeat every line in this bill with multiple amendments. We'll put in language which is much less inclusive than the language that's already in the bill, and we're going to do that at every committee that this bill goes through. see a very long path. I don't understand. If we trust the Commissioner of Finance, if we look at all of the sections, I mean, just starting to read 62Q, my eyes started glazing over. And the, you know, there's just enough protections in here, and to think you're putting more protections with two words is just ridiculous. I think we have to trust the judgment of the commissioner, which is already written into the bill, and we have to look at the compliance with those chapters. I mean, I dare anyone to read 62A through 62Q and say that there isn't enough protection in there.
Representative Wiggum.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, you just said trust the judgment of the commissioner.
Right.
Really, Osamas, that's all it does is trust the judgment. That's exactly what the amendment does. Mr. Gross testified when asked about your language on 10, whether that include actuarial soundness or not, and he seemed to indicate maybe not.
How could it not?
Well, Don, that's what he seemed to indicate in the words I heard. Put the doggone thing on. Let's get on to Amendment 3.
Clerk will take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
Clark.
Clark?
Clark.
Here. Clark.
Here.
Clark. Here.
Okay. Well.
Oh. Harness?
Harness. Earhart? Yes.
Winstead?
Yes.
Yes.
Grofflo?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Yes.
Hausman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
House? Huntley?
No.
Yaros?
Yes.
Junkie?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Cole?
Yes.
Leader?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Portrimba?
No.
Hamar?
Yes.
Zlowski? No. Pepin?
Yes.
Poppy?
Yes.
Pop. Agricavina?
No.
Saylor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Sertage?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Simon?
Yes.
Slobrick?
No.
Solberg?
No.
Swigum?
Yes.
Thiessen?
No.
Lavinius?
No.
Walker?
No.
Westrum?
Yes.
We have a teacher's lady there after watching the ball.
There being 21 no's and 16 ayes, the motion fails. Representative Coles, you've got another amendment.
I hope this is my last one.
H.O. 464A6.
Mr. Chair, members, I'd move the A6 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us, Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment, the A6 amendment would make sure that the Department of Commerce has sufficient oversight over the plan, over the pool, over the plans being offered. The amendment addresses some of the concerns raised by the Department of Commerce in their letter, and I would urge members' support.
Representative Sturridge.
Mr. Chair, members, I think we've had a long discussion over this. This bill doesn't exempt pool from any requirements under existing rules and regulations. I'd encourage a vote.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor of the...
Mr. Chair, I'd request a roll call, please.
Roll call has been requested. Clerk, take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson? Clark? Cornish?
Aye.
Earhart?
Yes.
Instead?
Yes.
Grofflo?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hausman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
House? Huntley? Yaros? Junkie?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Coles?
Yes.
Leader? Mahoney?
No.
Mariani? Murphy?
No.
Portrimba?
No.
Hamar? Polowski?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Brookavina?
No.
Saylor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Sertich?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Slavik?
No.
Solberg?
No.
Swigum?
Yes.
Thiessen?
No.
Wagenia?
No.
Walker? Westrum?
Yes.
Clark?
No. No.
Leader?
No.
Walker's here too.
Walker?
No.
Okay, being 22 no's and 11 yeses, motion is defeated. The next amendment is HO464A15. I don't have a name on this one. Okay, the next amendment is these need to be passed out, I guess. This is the pack that came in just before the meeting, I guess. Garofalo, you're the first one here, HO464A17. If that one can be passed out, then maybe you can explain the amendment while it's being passed out.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. And I'll ask the pages, in the interest of time, just to begin to pass out the amendments as fast as you can. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And my apologies, I did have a school group visiting, so I was outside the committee in case we've already touched base on the discussion items for the reserve requirement. Mr. Chairman and members, as is outlined in the commissioner's letter to us, and I'll just read it quickly, it says, no reserve requirement. Minnesota law requires insurance companies to have assets available to pay for potential claims. A pool covering 200,000 lives is likely to have roughly $1 billion in claims. This entity should have $150 million in liquid assets the first day of its operation. And, Mr. Chairman, before I move the amendment, I want to make sure I understand the legislation because, as I've said before, and I probably will repeat numerous times, I'm not a healthcare expert. But as I understand this legislation, as it's drafted right now, there is no reserve requirement. And Representative Sertich, or again, can someone clarify that for me? Is that the way the bill is drafted right now?
Representative Garofalo, we spent about the last hour discussing that issue while you were visiting with your school board member. But if somebody can give him a quick response, your wording is a little different than the previous amendments, but I think the gist is somewhat similar. Representative Sertich, if you want to comment.
Sure, Mr. Chair, committee members, bring your attention to page 3, lines 13 through 18, and it talks about the board must include claims reserves, stabilization reserves, reinsurance, and other features that will result in long-term stability and solvency in the health care plans option. Must include reserves.
So, Senator Garofalo. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to keep it on topic, and again, it wasn't a school board member, it was a school group, and the kids from Randolph, they really like me. They think I'm just the grooviest, so I couldn't miss out on...
Representative Garofalo, whatever it... The point I was trying to make was that we've talked a lot about the issue in that particular section that was just pointed out by Representative Sertich, so if you can be brief.
Mr. Chairman and members, the concern I have, and I would refer members to the fiscal note that we have before us. On page 3, under long-term fiscal considerations, and I'll just read the fiscal note. Also, pool will need to build reserves and surplus. Thus, we will need to have higher premiums in the first few years. This is what the fiscal note says. And I don't believe, Mr. Chairman, I will now move the A17 amendment. Members, I don't believe that Representative Sertich and the members of this committee would introduce a bill that would raise health insurance premiums for teachers. I just don't believe it. But yet that's what the fiscal note on this bill says, is it would raise health insurance premiums. And the question is, where are the dollars going to come from for the reserve fund for this? And if the teachers aren't going to be paying it, my suggestion would be that we have our good friends at Education Minnesota offer a guarantee for that. Mr. Chairman, those are my comments. Thank you.
Representative Curry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd encourage a no vote. If you look at page 3, lines 16 through 18, there's some flexibility there to provide plans through health carriers licensed in the state already, or self-insured, or a combination. I'd like to keep that flexibility. Also, I'd remind members that the board is not just made up of Education Minnesota. It's made up of employers and employees, and not just employees who are members of Education Minnesota. This singles them out. I'm here. I'd encourage them to vote.
Okay. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Garofalo, your amendment goes far beyond what you just described to us, and I am troubled by that, because you're saying that the board should not offer any plan unless Education Minnesota has executed and delivered to the board a written guarantee commitment in which they assume unconditional liability. I've never heard of anything like that. I think members need to vote no.
Representative Grapple. Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, can you tell me, under the legislation right now, if the plan did not have reserves, the dollars were not there, who would pay? Representative Wagenius.
What I am suggesting to you is you describe one thing. I read the amendment, and the amendment and your words didn't match in my mind. So I am voting no.
Representative Grapple. Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I'll tighten the question up. Who pays? Dollars aren't there. Who pays? I'll open the question up to the committee. Representative Wagenius, you don't have to answer it. Who pays if the dollars aren't there? Anyone?
That's fair.
Representative Penn.
So the same person who pays for any other insurance plan. We have the whole, go read all the parts of the 62A chapters, look at the language, the requirements in the bill. For some reason, weird reason, you suddenly put the Commissioner of Finance in here who has no bearing on any of this stuff. I don't understand that, but, you know, this is an amendment that is so carelessly drafted, you couldn't spend 2 minutes considering it. And we've already spent it. We've given it 2 minutes.
Representative Garofalo, I think one of the committee members is giving you a timeline here. Representative Garofalo. Mr. Chairman and members, I'll ask the question again. Representative Kahn, who is going to pay this?
Same as any other plan. Read 62A.
Okay,
read all of the 62. Read all of the chapters 62Q. Read 62Q if you want to. And specifically, just exactly why is the Commissioner of Finance in this?
Representative Garofalo. Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn. So if it's the same as other health plans, that would be the people who are paying the premiums, correct? Is that a fair statement?
I would suggest there are four chapters that relate to this. I don't pretend to know them, but I've glanced at them enough to see that covers how we structure state health plans, how we structure their responsibilities, and so forth. And that's all covered in this language. And it's the Commissioner of Finance has nothing to do with it. Would you tell me why you want the Commissioner of Finance looking at it?
Representative Garofalo. Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, I want to know who's paying for this. Whether it's the Department of Finance, if I can get your support by amending the Department of Finance out of there and focusing on the Department of Commerce, I'd be happy to do that. Representative Sertich, if your concerns are that I disproportionately place the burden on Education Minnesota and perhaps I should have them only be responsible for 70 or 60 or 50% of the plan, I'd be happy to offer that amendment to gather your support. I would suspect it would not. Members, I just want to know who's going to pay for this, because right now in the fiscal note, you got teachers back in my district telling me about how they think their health insurance is going to go down. And right in this fiscal note, it says you're going to have higher premiums. It's right there. And in terms of the long-term cost savings of going to having total pooling, page 6 of the fiscal note, it is not possible. Or another way of saying that is impossible. It is not possible to determine what additional costs or savings to school districts will result from this bill. I mean, this is in the fiscal note. This is not rocket science. It's right there. So, Representative Kahn, I could understand why you might not appreciate who I'm having protect the taxpayers of my district to foot the bill on this, I'm just asking for an alternative. If you have a suggestion, I, by all means.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, again, to who pays? We all pay. All the participants in the plan pay. That's the way insurance works. If it's health insurance or it's homeowners insurance or car insurance or life insurance, everybody pays. And you all take that particular risk. And to wave the fiscal note around with what's been indicated how supportive the Department of Commerce is to this particular bill, I believe they are the ones that would probably be deeply involved in writing the fiscal note. So I don't want to say it's a false fiscal note. I just say it's slanted towards a reason not to do the bill. So please don't wave it around and say that it's right here, it's right here. We can get another fiscal note somewhere from probably Education Minnesota who does enjoy the plan. The plan. So we could wave that one around.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess to this particular issue, and as Representative Kahn is talking about Chapter 62A, and we had the commissioners sit up here and say that they go through these actuarials to make sure that there is no company that actually is going to catastrophically fail, thereby throwing the burden back onto the individuals. But when I look at this bill, this doesn't say that. This doesn't say that they have to apply themselves to the provisions of this particular thing. It says the board is going to make the determination. Whereby, I guess one of the questions I would have for Representative Sertich is, you said, Representative Sertich, Mr. Chair.
Representative Severson.
Representative Sertich, you said that in the beginning that this was in compliance with all of the plans here, and I've got a question for you. If that's in fact the case, how much money do they have to accrue from the people that are signing up for this plan to actually jumpstart this particular provision?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Severson, we do not know yet. I mean, that's where the chicken and egg comes in, and that's where I hope we provide them flexibility to do what's best. I'll refer you back again to line 16 through 18 on page 3. They need to determine whether they provide plans through fully insured or if they become self-insured or a combination of both. It's up to this group of employers and employees to decide what is the best structure for them. So it's probably not one extreme or the other to start with, but it's somewhere in the middle as they go through it. And that's ultimately, we tie their flexibility if we start going down this road.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Severson.
And to that point, you know, we've all been getting hit with a ton of emails from our teachers saying, hey, we need affordable health insurance. We need something that is not going to keep spiking the way we've been spiking. And members, Representative Sertich, at the beginning, you said that there would be no immediate cost to the reserves because this is, you're going to, and through that accruing of these fees, that you're going to accrue a reserve. Well, the fact of the matter is, as soon as they turn over to this plan, they incur some of the costs. An example would be a woman who is having a complicated pregnancy, and she's in the hospital, and they've got a baby who is severely disabled, racking up costs. Well, when that plan switches over to this particular plan, they incur all of the costs from the beginning of that on. So there are going to be tremendous initial immediate costs to this plan, and if there is no reserve and you have those coming on, you don't have an opportunity. You need the instant assets that are there available, which goes to the $150 million, which are not in this plan. And I would speak to Representative Kahn's statements that this plan does not fit Chapter 62.
It says it must.
It says it must, but then it says the board can determine.
Let's try to keep going through the chair, the author would like to enter into the discussion.
Thank you, Representative Severson. At the beginning, they may use a licensed in-state health carrier who would have a lot of reserves, a health plan that's out there right now. So, and I believe that would be the best thing to do at the beginning is to use an existing company or partner with an existing company that already has reserves and then move towards self-insured over the course of time. So I believe they will be covered sufficiently.
Representative Earhart.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the question of who pays, In the insurance world, if you have a stock insurance company and the thing goes belly up, the shareholders pay. If you have a mutual company, insurance company, the policyholders pay. This is a public company. Who will pay? I would suggest the public will be paying. That's the question here, that the answer to Garofalo's question.
Representative Spigum.
Mr. Chairman, just very quickly, Mr. Garofalo, to your amendment, with all due respect, I think you should withdraw it. With all due respect, it would be no different than putting NFIB or Farm Bureau or any other group that's out there advocating their position, making them liable for what may happen. We don't do it. It's inappropriate. Withdraw the amendment to the others on the committee to not make this thing work mechanically and make this actuarially sound. It's just as bad. You're just as bad being used by pawns by a group or association just as much as this amendment. You made your point, Representative Garofalo. You made your point. I would withdraw the amendment if I were you out of respect. Let's get on and let's make this thing work.
Representative Garofalo, concluding comment or action?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Swigum, with all due respect, okay, I'm not going to withdraw the amendment. And the reason why is because we're looking at the plan right now. We're talking about anywhere from $100 million to $150 million in reserves that are going to be required for this plan. We're talking 200,000 people in the plan. Works out to a family of four that they're going to have to pay $2,000 in higher premiums on an annual basis just to get the budget and the reserves in line with where it needs to be. That's $2,000. And you know what, Mr. Chairman, Representative Swigum? There's not a snowball's chance in Hades that Representative Sertich is going to support, is going to force those teachers to do that. There's not a chance that, he's not that dumb, he's a smart guy, he's not going to do it. So the question is, if they're not going to pay $2,000, the family of four isn't going to pay $2,000 in higher premiums, where's the money going to come from? And that's the question I'm asking. I know exactly where it's coming from. It's coming from the taxpayers, it's coming from people in my district, people in your district. So I think if people want to offer an alternative to my amendment, I'm happy with that. But I'm not going to put the taxpayers in my district on a hook for this. Or the alternative is putting the teachers in my district on the hook for $2,000 in higher premiums. Not a chance.
Okay, all those in favor of the amendment signified by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion defeated. The next amendment we have is SO276DEI, again, without a name. Representative Pepper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's a one.
I will move the DE-1 amendment.
That's a one.
The E-1.
Yeah, E-1. Okay. Representative Pepin moves the amendment. Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Sertich, we've had some discussions about voluntary pools and why not put them in with other state pools, that sort of thing. And I just wanted to point out that I believe it was in 05 that Commissioner, at the time, the Commissioner of Dewar, Cal Ludeman, had been working very hard on this. And he came up with a program, his department came up with a program they thought would be very effective, and it is to allow school districts to enroll in the public employees insurance pool. This language is direct, is the exact bill I introduced in 2005. It does some things. It changes the name of the public employee insurance program to the buyer's group and essentially allows school districts, it would require them to make a bid once every 4 years. It wouldn't actually require them to be in the pool, but it makes a lot of improvements to the program currently known as PEEP and would allow any district to be in it if they so choose. And obviously by expanding the two pools, you would have the benefit of having more people in it, so it would be a more solvent pool. And you know, some have said that there's no other way. We have to do it the way that Representative Sertich has in his bill, but Commissioner Ludeman and his department felt that they had the answer, and they've been working on it for a couple of years. Obviously, things have changed a little bit in terms of the department, but I think that we're moving far too fast. Even the Star Tribune came out against the current plan, and so, members, I think we should slow this down, and we should look at adopting this amendment. I think we can make this work out, and I think the way to do it is to put it with the public employees insurance program, which would now be the public buyers group.
Representative,
I actually think it's important not to slow down. Members, this is not going too fast. We've been at this since the original study for the last 6 years, and within that time, health insurance for our school employees has been on the rise 87%. It's not a time to slow down. It's a time to get it done. Members, I encourage an overall.
Mr. Chair, I haven't had much to say this morning. I passed on my earlier one, but this is really the plan that we had put in the state government finance bill a couple years ago. I know at that time, Representative Kahn, Representative Solberg, Representative Hilty are all members of this committee, and we had positive testimony from Education Minnesota that they thought this was a big step in the right direction. We had testimony from other groups that were opposed to the original bill that Representative Sertich is now carrying, saying that instead of just always passing bills that aren't going to happen or kowtowing to whatever interest group, why don't we actually do something that solves the problem? And by getting school districts, giving the districts that are poor and having problems with health insurance, those little districts that don't have economies of scale, maybe they have trouble with people having cancer, maybe they have problems with catastrophic illness, maybe they only have a couple dozen employees, but they're a really small district. Give them a chance to buy into the PEEP program and to moderate the rates. This is really the plan. There's no doubt in my mind the governor would actually sign this if the Pepin Amendment passes. I don't know about the bill we have before us, but let's actually do something that's got a chance of solving some problems around here instead of just going full force into something that has massive opposition from a lot of, I don't know, one school board member yet that is in favor of this bill as is right now. This is something that gives flexibility to those small school districts. It gives flexibility to the school employees who are having a hard time with health insurance. And I certainly want to, I'm a former teacher myself, I certainly want to see affordable insurance offered for those small school districts. And this spends less money than the Sertich bill. It gives lots of flexibility, allows school districts to buy in if they so choose. It gives local control. And I would ask for a roll call on this one. I think it actually solves the problem, and we actually bring people together on something rather than going through the motions of trying to pass a bill that has so much massive opposition. I think if this one came before the floor, I don't know anybody who would want to vote against it.
Okay, I got one.
Representative. By the way, roll call is going to Representative.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seifert, and what happened to that state government finance bill?
Mr. Chair, we decided to go the route of having one omnibus bill, and so the state government finance bill got tabled.
Just checking.
Representative Turnbull.
What happened to your state government finance
bill? Mr. Chairman, it got further than that one.
Well,
members on the amendment, Representative Turnbull.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know who to ask this to, but how many schools are already in the PEEP program? I know there are some. I just want to know how many.
Hey, anybody know the answer to that question? How many? You'll have to come down and... Our Representative Fagan, do you know the answer?
Sure, I don't know the number totally. I know my school district, Kenny Wanamingo, is one that is in the PEEP program, and I think they've had... insurance increases in the last 2 years of 31 and 29% respectively caused by some experience rating. And in both cases, it should have been a greater increase than that if PEEP would have actuarially brought out the appropriate premium increase. They subsidized it.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Johansson, if you can answer the question.
Mr. Chairman, there are approximately 4,000 total lives insured under the PEEP plan, of which about eight school districts are in. It fluctuates. We lose one, we pick one up. It really has become an insurance of last resort for school districts.
Representative Trimba.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Western and I have a school that is in the PEEP program, and I've gotten a lot of emails saying that they want to be in the school employees program, this piece, because probably some of the same things that Representative Swigum is saying is that they've increased also, but I'm not sure if they would have got increased more or not, and that's why I wanted to know how that was working with the schools that are currently in the PEEP program.
Okay, Representative Pepin, concluding comment, and then we'll vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out that there aren't a lot of school districts in PEEP right now, and it is considered the pool of last resort. But we could change that. There's no reason we can't get a lot of these groups in. Let's just not require every school district to do it. You might get 100,000 more people, and that would certainly expand the pool. And the whole, the language and just the excitement that the department had when this came out, they really wanted to have pilot programs and find a way to make it work so that it wouldn't be a pool of last resort. It would be a pool that the districts would want to be in. It's just that it wouldn't require every district to be in, but it would expand this greatly. And, you know, I think we all know that if there are, you know, 100,000 or 150,000 on top of that 4,000, those rates would come down dramatically. So I don't know that that's exactly a fair comparison right now, because if Education Minnesota so chose to encourage their members to be in this pool, things would be a lot different.
Okay, clerk, take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Cornish?
Aye.
Earhart?
Yes.
Dimstead?
Yes.
Groffalo?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hausman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Haus?
No.
Huntley?
No.
Yaros?
No.
Chunky?
No.
Khan?
No.
Coles?
Yes.
Leader?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Ochirmba?
No.
Pimar?
No.
Lowski?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Rukavina?
No.
Saylor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Thurdage?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Simon? Bob Simon? Slavik?
No.
Solberg?
No.
Swigum?
No.
Thiessen?
No.
Virginia?
No.
Walker?
Nope.
Westrom?
No.
Okay, being 27 no's and 10 yeses, motion is defeated. The amendment A3 that was handed out, Representative Westrom, since it was duplicative of an earlier one, has withdrawn it. Representative Westrom, you have an amendment SO2768-4. Which is very similar, but it has a different timeline on it, Representative Westrom. This is the one where your three-year amendment.
Right. Yeah. Mr. Chair, I will move that amendment.
Representative Westrom moves the amendment. Representative Westrom.
Members, the A4 amendment is a compromise or a way to try to find some middle ground. I've got 9 school districts. 5 benefit, 4 get worse. And so you can't cut the baby more in half than that. And I've been asking for numbers. I ask teachers that have emailed me, what are the savings you're being projected on the plan? And nobody's able to give a definite answer. I've asked different staff around here, how much is this going to save my school districts over what they're currently doing, the teachers? As we've heard, there's no guarantee that it will even save money. It may cost money. We've said, well, the ones that are going to benefit, or at least feel they're going to benefit up front, they want to get into this. The ones that don't feel they're going to benefit up front don't want to get into this. And so, therefore, why not have a voluntary pool? Well, that amendment's been offered. It hasn't passed. But why would we not want to give our school districts some local options? And this amendment would say, okay, we're going to try this mandatory pool for 3 years. So everybody's going to have to do it for 3 years. And then, at that point, if there's not the benefits, a school district could decide on their own after that to stay in or find another solution. And, members, I can't believe that anybody would oppose this amendment, especially if you've been supportive of this bill, because one of the main arguments that I heard from teachers when they came and talked to me with the service co-ops, which is who's providing a lot of the insurance now, is their restrictive nature of contract. When they enter into a contract, it's a 5 or year or longer contract, and they just can't believe that anybody would mandate them into being stuck with such high premium increases and et cetera, et cetera. So in using their own words, I thought, you know what, why should we also stick these same groups, teachers groups or school districts, with an indefinite mandatory policy, the exact same thing that they were lobbying against in wanting to get out of the service co-ops, because they were so restrictive and the tactics they used to require them to be in for such a long period of time, they just felt they were really over a barrel. And so this amendment is to try to find some middle ground. 3 years, if the pool isn't doing what it's held to be doing, then the school district can decide to get out. If it's benefiting and bringing savings and offering the school district better plans, they aren't going to get out. And so this gets them started, gives them 3 years. Members, I would support.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd encourage members to vote no. 3 years seems like a somewhat arbitrary number, but to get back to voluntary pools, which is, in essence, would be after 3 years, there'd be adverse selection, and it'd be bad for the people that maintain in the pool. I encourage a no vote.
Mr. Chair, we'll request a roll call given that.
Roll call has been requested. I was just going to suggest to members of the committee, unless you've got something compelling to say, we've got 17 amendments here yet. Unless you have something compelling to say, if we could have the person who moves the amendment lay out the case for the amendment, Representative Sertich, as the chief author of the bill, respond. And like I say, I don't want to cut off debate, but unless you have something that's really new information so we can plow through these, it might be a good way to approach it. We do have floor session at, 12:30. So, Representative Seifert.
I'll be very brief, Mr. Chair. I thought this was a good middle ground amendment based on the emails I've gotten from places like North St. Paul, Maplewood, Minnetonka, Hopkins, even Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the Range, which I don't think are real wild about this plan. I know they're all represented by Democrats now, and they're all blindly voting for this bill because an interest group is telling them to. But I think this is the middle ground. This is not a year-by-year deal. This is a three-year opt-in and opt-out with local control that gives places like Rochester and Maplewood and Minnetonka that flexibility that they're seeking. So if we're going to at least show some semblance of compromise in this bill, this is the one that makes the most common sense for those people.
Representative Sertich. Okay, with all those, or all those in favor of the amendment, roll call has been requested. That's right.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark? Cornish? Earhart?
Yes.
Ipfenstead?
Yes.
Groffalo?
Yes.
Freiling? Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hausman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
House?
No.
Huntley?
No.
Yarrows?
No.
Junkie?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Coles?
Yes.
Minchewski?
No.
Leader?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani? Murphy?
No.
Wotrimba?
No.
Beamer?
No.
Blowski?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Zuccavina?
No.
Saylor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Sertich?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Slavik?
Yes.
Solberg?
No.
Swigum?
Yes.
Thiessen?
No.
Wagenius?
No.
Walker?
No.
Westrom?
Yes.
Clark votes no.
Somebody said
Clark.
Clark. Okay, being 25 no's and 13 yes's, motion defeated. Representative Coles, I've got one here with your name on it. It's SO27A6. Is he there? Oh, he's not. Okay. Representative Seifert, you've got the next one then. That's SO276A8. And if the pages, by the way, to kind of get a little ahead of the game, to begin to pass off one of the amendments.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the amendment.
Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last year when we had our, 2 years ago, I'm trying to remember now, when we had a bill similar to this that former Representative Davids had, there was a lot of discussion about Minneapolis and St. Paul not wanting to be part of this plan, and that they had negotiated their own plans that they felt were good and they didn't need. In fact, Representative Kahn and I had talked about them not being wild about this bill in committee. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I would give the opportunity for the folks from Minneapolis and St. Paul on the committee to give some flexibility to their local school boards. They certainly can opt out of this. It's not an opt-in, so that they'd have to remove themselves from this process, but it being that no one else seems to want to be able to give them that flexibility, I thought I would do that.
Mr. Chair and members, I represent portions of St. Paul and Roseville, but I've talked to Representative Otremba, and Representative Otremba has told me this. 4 school districts in her district have no insurance. 1 because of a kidney transplant. 1 because of cancer. If we did this, we would be saying, we don't care about you, we've got ours, and we certainly don't want you to hurt us. Because we are secure. We are all in this together, in this healthcare crisis. We are all in this together. And so, Representative Seifert, I'm not blindly voting. It is a very intentional decision to say there is a problem and we all have to recognize our mutual interdependence.
Sam Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hate that when somebody steals my speech. But I will say it just this way. Representative Hausman said it correctly. We are all in this together, and as a St. Paul legislator, I'm going to vote against this particular amendment.
Okay, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying...
Mr. Chairman, two people...
Representative Kahn, I recognize you. We're just trying to move things along. Representative Kahn.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go the opposite direction from my Chief St. Paul colleague. I really understand the problem that Representative Otremba has in her district and the other small districts do have. The issue is, though, that you do need this pool, and you do need the pool to be of a certain size. But we've had no evidence, and I've asked the author for that, of how big that size needs to be. I take this list, which is the Appendix A, and I start going up the bottom, up the list from the bottom, because I think that the largest districts may be large enough to have their own pools. It's completely true. At some point, you go beyond having the benefits of scale. And the benefits of scale, I don't know, and I'd be really happy for someone to give me an analysis that show that you need the largest districts in this. One of the points of leaving some of the largest districts in a separate place, and I'm not sure where the line should be drawn. You know, I think you've drawn it a little bit too small, but is the fact that you then kind of get systems, competing systems, looking at each other. That's been very good in the pension policy. At one point, I believe that we should only have one pension fund, and we didn't go that way. And I actually decided that having several large pension funds meant you got to compare different investment policies. So I'm going to go against my St. Paul colleagues on this. I'm not quite sure that this amendment goes far enough, but I do believe we need some very specific and very limited. I voted against all the other opt-out provisions, but we need some very specific and very limited opt-out provisions. I think this one is too small, but I don't have any information to get a better one.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to join Representative Hausman and Representative Mahoney in their opposition to this amendment. I think it's wise opposition. I appreciate your compassion, your sharing, your willingness to cooperate. I would hope that it would also extend to the equity addressing the disparity that exists in the funding formulas as well for St. Paul and the district representative Kimber or my district. I would just hope your compassion and sharing extended a little further than what seems to be in this amendment.
Okay, with that, amendment is withdrawn. We now have SO 276A6, Representative Poles. He's not back yet. Okay. SO 276A9. Updated study, it says. Maybe one thing that might be helpful in the future is for members that are submitting amendments, if they can be sure to put their name on it, it would help with the knowing who's doing what when. Let's see. Representative Pepin? Okay.
Thank you. Sorry about that, Mr. Chair. This amendment simply calls for an updated study because the data that we have is outdated. It's 4 years old, and we really don't know what the numbers are right now, and I think it's premature to go forward with this when we don't have a complete and updated study.
Okay. Representative Fritsch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This issue has been studied in the past. It's time for action and not study. I'd encourage a no vote.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment.
I'm going to roll call it.
We're in the middle of a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. No.
Okay. Motion defeated. division has been requested. Okay. I think I've got pretty good ears on that one, but all those in favor of the amendment, raise their hand.
I'm just giving you a chance to
And those opposed.
Yeah, we should have brought that.
Okay, being 25 no's and 10 yeses, even though I just recently had a birthday, my ears are still pretty good. Motion fails. We now have one by Representative Severson, SO 276A10. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and this is kind of a simple amendment. And I wonder if I could just preface this with a couple questions to the author, Mr. Chair.
President Sertich, he had a question of you, I think, before he moves the amendment. Is that what your...
Representative
Severson?
A couple questions.
Of the author, right? Oh, you're looking for the amendment?
Yeah.
Could we be sure the author apparently...
I might have it. There's just a big packet.
I understand, yeah. I can give you a chance to find it or somebody else. Okay, the amendment has not been moved. He wanted to preface his motion, I guess, with a question or two. So, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Sertich, in the beginning, you said that the cost of the health insurance for our participating members has gone up 87% in the last six years. Can you tell me what the number is for the general populace, what the increases are have been for the general populace?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson, I do not know.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sertich, I'd be interested to know that number, and that will come up again. The other question is on page 5 in the bill, tax creation exemption. In this particular bill, does this give that benefit to this program only, or is this a general practice across the board for nonprofit insurance companies?
Mr. Chair, I only heard the second half of the question, but I'd actually like to defer to our House staff to answer that question, if they could.
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chair, I am sorry I'm not familiar with the taxing of health maintenance organizations.
Let's see what's apparently...
I got somebody coming up.
Oh, we've got somebody that... okay. Mr. Johansson. In the interest of time, those of you that are frequently asked questions, maybe you could sit somewhere in the back there.
I'll do that, Mr. Chair. Representative Severs, specifically, your question addressed the premium tax. Is that correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Johansson. And in Subdivision 1 on page 5, it says creation tax exemption. There's established, and obviously it's an established clause in here, and it has Education Minnesota, Minnesota School Employee Insurance provision as the new language in here. I was just wondering if this is common practice for insurance pools.
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson, no, it's not. As a matter of fact, self-insured pools throughout the state, including the school, the State Employees Insurance Group, are exempt entirely from this taxation. This pool prorates the taxation to reflect the current status of school employees who are assessable and those who aren't, so that it's held harmless. The revenue stays the same, but our tax rate is not increased.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And basically what the A-10 amendment does is it's kind of a reverse. It says that if there are any special circumstances that this particular board and insurance company are getting, then everybody else should get it. Based on the testimony of Representative Kahn, Representative Sturgis, that this is all in compliance with the Commissioner of Commerce, I'll withdraw the amendment.
The amendment is withdrawn. We now have amendment SO276A11.
Mine.
Representative Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask for a roll call on this.
Roll call has been requested.
My good friend, Representative Emmer, asked me to participate in this. He is not a member of this committee, and he wanted everybody to make certain that everybody had an opportunity to vote on this. And so you can see that it's very plain and straightforward that on page... 2.31, after employer, we insert, except that coverage offered by the board must include domestic partners of eligible employees.
This is from Emma.
Got several hands that went up. Representative Clark.
Representative Earhart, can I ask you a question?
Who's
Representative Earhart.
Representative Earhart, are you supporting this amendment?
I'm offering it.
I'm asking if you're going to vote for it.
I'm offering it.
I understand that.
I'm offering it. I'm answering your question.
Well,
so
Mr. Chairman, that's fine. Well, I guess the only thing I'd say is there's been a lot of discussion about compassion, and we're all in this together and so on, and I guess I'd just repeat that, that the employees in the school who are... who have domestic partners certainly are equal employees to all the other employees in the school.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, this is a subject that I strongly support. In fact, I authored the bill to call for the state health plan to include domestic partners, which was then a mine. I'm going to vote against it only because it's a very poorly crafted amendment. It does not give us any definition of domestic partners. It does not, there's a much, we're going to offer this amendment, Representative Earhart, at some future point. I can give you a much better way of doing it than this is. So I'm voting against this because it's very badly thought out, and it's obviously just supposed to be a trap, and I don't have any problem voting against something that's not well done on a roll call.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, I've followed you as a member of the other side, and I applaud you for offering an amendment that sets the trap but gives the governor a reason to veto this, and by picking on one particular group of people, it's a nice way to do it. I'm going to vote against it myself, though.
Any further discussion? Representative Earhart.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman, for Representative Kahn. I don't think the amendment is badly drawn at all. It's very straightforward. What do you mean by badly drawn or badly?
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, one, we have no definition of domestic partners, so we have no idea of what we're talking about. We have no, the fact is that coverage is offered, the board isn't really offering coverage. It's really the separate plans that are offering coverage. And frankly, I think there are some plans out there that may have some, whatever definite, and I don't really know what I'm talking about because I don't know what your definition of domestic partner is, but, you know, I would not object to a school district being given a choice of plans of which some covered some kinds of people and others didn't cover other ones. I think we're talking about various freedoms. This is just, much too up in the air for anyone to understand.
Well,
if you paid attention to some of the things I've been doing recently, you could have done a much more carefully drawn and better amendment than this.
I'm very sorry, Mr. Chairman, that you are affronted by the brevity and of the amendment, but late at night when I was approached to consider this, I just didn't have time to, could not get to the effort of calling you to see how you would have drafted it. So we drafted it this way. Very simple, straightforward.
Any further discussion? Representative Hurtig? Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've enjoyed listening to the comments on this, and since we often go back and use votes in the future on positions that House committees have taken or the full legislative body in the House, I just wanted to make sure that it was very clear on the record. Individuals that are very supportive of this particular community being part of a statewide pool, the votes that individuals may take today does not indicate any position on if these individuals should be in this pool or not.
Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Walker. I could not have said it better, but I would add to that. I've been very consistent about leaving flexibility for the employer-employee group to make decisions, and I believe that's important. And actually, I've supported a bill in the past this year to allow local units of government to make these decisions based on their own. So to maintain consistency and to not be involved in this gotcha politics, I'd encourage a no vote.
Okay, all those, and we have a roll call being requested. Clerk, take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson? Clark?
Pass.
Cornish?
No.
Earhart?
Yes.
Stinstead? Groffalo? Hackbarth? Hosman?
Pass.
Kilty?
No.
Howes? Huntley? Yaros?
No.
Junkie?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Coles? Macheski?
No.
Leader?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
Yes.
Murphy?
No.
Ochremba? Tamar? Polowski?
No.
Pepin? Poppy?
No.
Rukavina? Sailor?
No.
Seifert?
No.
Sertich?
No.
Severson? Simon?
No.
Solberg?
No.
Swidham?
No.
Thiessen?
No.
Wagenius?
Pass.
Walker?
Pass.
restroom.
Yes. No.
Oh, you're no.
No.
Oh, let him make up his own mind.
Well, Representative Westrum,
I'll pass.
Okay, we have everybody that wanted to vote.
Carol changed from abstention to no.
Get your appropriate instructions.
Mr. Chair, I thought that amendment was over. Hi.
You ended up no?
I'm no, Mr. Chair.
Representative Emma is going to be very disappointed.
He always has the floor.
Okay, we have 20 no's and 2 yeses. So motion is defeated. You know, I've been very open to taking amendments, and Representative Earhart, you know, when we start to politicize a bill beyond the normal discussion about insurance and put an amendment up like this, that's obviously just put there for political purposes, I just have to express my disappointment and would hope that as we move forward, we not go in a direction that's these kind of gotcha type amendments.
Well, with Mr. Chairman, I don't see any reason why you couldn't vote your consciences on this and don't give me that political baloney. Everybody in this room has at one time or another voted on this. And I don't know where it's been in the process. I think I voted on it. And you should have voted on it today, if that's what your conscience says. If it says no, then vote no. And that's what your conscience told you.
I think we all understood the purpose of that amendment. And with that, we're now have another question before us. It's an amendment by Representative Garofalo. It's SO276A12. Representative Garofalo is not here. Representative Coles, you have an amendment SO276A6. Representative Coles, we'll get to you in a moment. Representative Coles, care to move the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the amendment. What the amendment does is change the makeup of the board slightly. It lowers the number of Education Minnesota appointees from 7 to 4. And adds that the commissioners of Commerce, Health, and Employee Relations should be appointed to the board or would be members of the board. Representative Sertich has indicated that he's not looking to get around the Department of Commerce, but I'm not entirely sure that that the language as it's currently drafted provides Minnesotans with the protection it ought to. I think that we ought to have the Commissioners of Commerce, Health, and Employee Relations. I know they can certainly work together with Education Minnesota to make sure that the plans being offered are sound. Still gives Education Minnesota the appointments or a majority of the appointments. I want to make sure, Mr. Chair, that I'm not misstating. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I was talking about Education Minnesota, where the School Boards Association. We're reducing the number of appointments from the School Boards Association from 7 to 4 and allowing those 3 individuals to be a part of the board.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Figgum, you had your hand up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's not this amendment, but it's to your comments. I know you hold the gavel, Mr. Chairman, but that does not give you the right, sir, to question the intent of another member and his amendment that he offered here. He's been very, very consistent on that issue to my not liking over the years. And you questioned his intent, and I think it was very inappropriate to you to do so. You hold the gavel, you hold the power, you got the votes, but you still have to operate with some degree of class, which I thought was lacking in your comment, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Swigum, your point is well taken, but that doesn't mean that I wasn't disappointed with the amendment, but we'll leave it at there. I'll accept your comment.
Mr. Chair, I misspoke. I want to make sure that I'm very clear about the amendment. I'm not trying to confuse people. As I was reading the bill and what it amends, this does remove three of the Education Minnesota appointees, and not the School Boards Association. So I want to be very clear about what the amendment does. I'm not trying to confuse anybody. I apologize for my mistake.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd encourage a no vote. Balance is important. I wouldn't have cared if he was trying to get rid of the employer side or the employee side. I think the balance that is here is important, and this would disrupt that. I'd encourage a no vote.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
Motion defeated. Representative Garofalo is still not back. Okay. Representative Westrom, we have another one by you, SO276A13.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call on the A13 amendment and move the A13 amendment.
The motion before us, Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, this would be a good faith provision. We're all aware of this. Certainly dealing with health insurance claims for the pool that would be created here. I think the 200,000 enrollees certainly would benefit from this as well, that they have everybody bargaining in good faith. Mr. Chairman, I think people are familiar with this policy, and I think this would be a much more appropriate location for this this policy than in the judiciary bill, and happens to be a provision that I had co-authored on Representative Atkins' bill.
Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair, this is gotcha vote two. Members, this is not in the judiciary bill. It shouldn't be in this bill. It's traveling on its own, actually. The Speaker, the Governor's Office, and the Senate are working in a bipartisan way to look for a solution in a different bill. That's its appropriate place. I'd encourage an over.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sertich, I may join you in your no vote on this bill, but my question for you, Representative Sertich, I spoke with the Department of Commerce out in the hall a few minutes ago. It's my understanding that Chapter 72A of Minnesota Statutes, which is the Fair Claims Practices Act, would not be applicable to the state employee health plan. Can you tell me whether my understanding, the Commerce Department's understanding, is correct? And if that's the case, why aren't we providing the individuals the protections at least afforded by 72A? I mean, if we're going to do that, I'm absolutely with you. I'm going to support, or I'm going to oppose this amendment. But absent that, I'm concerned that we aren't providing consumers, school employees, the same protections that everybody else has under their health plans.
I defer, Mr. Chair, I defer that question to our counsel.
Mr. Johansson.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that the Fair Trade Practices Act has to do with how claims are processed and the like, and there is the whole bill is predicated on the idea that the board is going to employ current vendors to process claims, to process things, and those vendors are already subject to this particular fair claims. They're the ones who are going to have the procedures. They're the ones who are going to have the ability to make sure that the processes are followed according to that. And so we are not exempt in that sense, in that we aren't creating a new claims processing or interaction with the consumer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sertich, I hope that you will give me some indication whether you will, if what Mr. Johansson is saying is correct. I don't think that between now and the floor, we couldn't work out some comfort language to indicate, to make sure that the Minnesota consumers do have the protections of 72A, regardless of what's intended with the vendors or not. We can put a simple, I think I know where it would fit in here. I'm going to oppose, in order to be consistent on how I feel about this bad faith proposal, I'm going to oppose the Westrom Amendment right now, but I do think that we need to make sure consumers have the protections provided by Minnesota law.
Representative Seifert.
Well, Mr. Chair, it seems that when people don't want to vote for things they believe in, it's gotcha politics. For whatever reason, that's the standard. You know, come up with some original material on why to oppose things. If you believe in this stuff, vote for it. I understand on the other amendment you're thinking that trigger a veto, and the governor's open-minded on this bill right now as is. But, you know, you're voting for these things, the good faith and so forth. I don't know if Representative Atkins was in here, if what he would say about this, but everybody's tripping over themselves to vote for all these things the last 2 weeks, and now when we offer it on a bill with special interest, they say, well, you can't amend it, you can't have one word change. Everybody trips over themselves to try to rationalize a no vote. I'm going to be consistent today, but I just think it's very interesting that people are voting opposite of what they supposedly believe in for some reason of gotcha politics. I can't believe it. If you believe in good faith and insurance, and this is an insurance bill, we were told, not an education bill, I just can't believe this, that when you have words saying that the board does not act in good faith, the board engages in fraud, false pretense, false promise, misrepresentation, who wouldn't be for that? But not for someone saying you can't change one word in the bill.
Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am going to be consistent with the activities that have already happened on Representative Paymar's bill. This language was removed on threat of a veto, so why would we want to put it in? I want this bill to pass, not to be vetoed by the governor, and he's already indicated in his veto message he does not support this. Representative Paymar opened his bill back up and took it out to get signature. Why would we waste more time sending it to the governor and then having to come back and open it up to remove it? So I think it's very consistent to vote no to this, just like Representative Cole said, and follow what the governor has already said.
I might just add, being that I commented on the last amendment, the point that I was trying to make on that one, as well as to some degree this one, is that we have an important piece of legislation here that many of us would like to see move forward, and some of these amendments that are sidetracking it is the point I was trying to make. I don't think are helpful in moving the bill forward, nor do I think they are particularly helpful in allowing us to get our job done here this morning. But with that, sure. Representative, who's that? Westrom, you're next. Yes.
Mr. Chair, it is interesting that whenever Representative Sertich decides he would want to call something gotcha politics, that's all of a sudden what it is, and Representative Seifert, I think, makes a very, very good point comments earlier that people didn't want to vote the way they really wanted to because they didn't feel they could on this bill. Well, that's what our committee process is about, Mr. Chair. There's lots of those things that happen, and so if every time an amendment comes up that any one of us would rather not see on a certain bill, if Representative Sertich would like to help lead the charge, and I'd join right in with him, maybe we could create a pact around here to make them all gotcha politics. But let's take it a step further then and have an agreement to not ever offer amendments that deviate from any bill that the author is carrying forward or an interest group wants in their perspective, and forget about the rest of the citizens or voters that are out there. And then, of course, everybody has pure, clean votes, and nobody has to worry about some postcard that says something and misconstrues what a vote really was or wasn't. But maybe we should create a pact from this day forward, Representative Sertich. I'll join in with you, and anytime if anybody has a preference to not have an amendment on a certain bill and they'd rather have it somewhere else, both leaderships can join together in getting those members to back off their amendments. If that's what we want, we could facilitate that happening. I'm sure you could get that started, but that seems to be what's being talked about here. Mr. Chairman, I'll withdraw the amendment at this time.
Amendment is withdrawn. Representative Seifert, we have an amendment by you, H.O. 464A1. Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, which one did you bring up?
A1.
Mr. Chairman,
premium rates must not increase by more than 3% in a 2-year period. It's relatively short.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the amendment.
Okay, motion is before us. Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, we hear a lot from people about how we want to control costs on health care and that premiums are going up exponentially and outrageously. And so if this is a clear cat's meow and it's going to solve all of our problems, I think we should write into the bill that premium rates should not increase by more than 3%. It's pretty straightforward. The board can manage this. It is very obvious to me that we have a lot of people concerned about health insurance costs, and if this bill is so great and so wonderful and so magical, we'll just write right into the bill that we're not going to have the premium rates grow by more than 3%, and I'll ask for roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested. Sertich. Okay. It's beginning to be a long morning, Representative Sertich.
That's all right, Mr. Chair. I'd encourage members a no vote on this. I guess I won't call it what it is, but you'll see about two or three more amendments to try to cap insurance in just this one area. It'd be interesting to see if members would vote to cap all insurance plans. I know Representative Berglund had a bill on it, and it didn't receive a favorable hearing by some members on the other side of the aisle, so I'd encourage a no vote.
Representative Seifert.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to figure out why would we be opposed to this amendment. I mean, that's not exactly a reason, because Representative Berglund did it in the Senate bill, so I'm just modeling after her wonderful leadership in health care. What specifically would this cause a problem with?
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think that this amendment would tend to work in the opposite direction of the first amendment that we should have put on the bill, or the second amendment that spoke to the actuarial soundness of the plan as reviewed at that time by the Department of Commerce. I think this tends to work in the other direction. I think the amendment should not be placed on, and I'd like to see some consistency.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With all due respect to Representative Seifert, all due respect to Representative Sertich and this committee, there has been too much gotcha politics, but I would move to table this amendment.
If the motion is before us, non-debatable. All those in favor of the motion to table the amendment.
You can't table an amendment. That's been against the rules, custom, and usage, and the rules themselves. The only thing that can be tabled is a rule, is an amendment to the rules themselves of the House.
You're correct. I was moving too quickly.
I'm done, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. You're correct. So any further discussion on the amendment? Okay, all those in favor of the amendment?
Carlson?
Carlson is a no.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Cornish?
Yes.
Earhart? Finstead?
Yes.
Rothwell?
Pass.
Pat Rothwell?
Pass.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hosman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Howes?
No.
Huntley? Yarrows?
No.
Junkie?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Coles?
Pass.
Lanchesky?
No.
Leader?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Ochemba?
No.
Amar?
No.
Glowski?
No.
Pepin?
No.
Poppy?
No.
Rukavina? Taylor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Sertich?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Solberg?
No.
Rhythm?
No.
Thiessen?
No.
Rovinius?
No.
Walker?
No.
Westrom?
Yes.
Raffle? Yes. In 26 no's and...
No. Yeah. Wait. Yeah.
And 8 yeses, motion is defeated. You know, I'm going to have to check on that because I think technically we have a former speaker here that a motion to table is in order, but it would have had the impact of tabling the entire bill.
Yeah.
We'll check on that. The easiest thing was at this point to just defeat the motion. Mr. Speaker, our former... Well, you and I have both been here a long time, and I think the more I thought about it, it was appropriate, I think, to entertain the motion to table, but I don't think everybody would have understood at that point in time what the possible outcome of that might have been. And at any rate, in case that issue ever comes up again, we'll double check with the front desk and
Mr. Chair, under Rule 3.12, motion to lay on the table, a motion to lay on the table is not in order on a motion to amend, except that a motion to amend the rules may be tabled.
So it's not. Table.
Okay, so we couldn't have in that case. Okay. Very good. Doesn't hurt to have the rule book there. We've now got a representative, or a motion by Representative Pepin. That's H.O. 464A2. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A2 amendment, and I'd like a roll call.
A motion has been made, and a roll call has been requested. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Sertich. My amendment would allow private school or parent who homeschools to be eligible for the pool on a year-to-year basis as well. I think we all know that private schools also have a hard time insuring, and I think this would be a fair amendment, and I would urge member support.
The motion is before us. Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd encourage a no vote. This goes back to the voluntary nature of the pool, which I believe doesn't work, so I'd like to see this maintained mandatory.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Oh, you got several.
Doesn't dismantle the mandatory. This just allows these folks to opt in.
Mr. Chair, I was going to just say what she had said, that this doesn't dismantle the fact that you'd have a mandatory plan without opt-out for the plans that Representative Sertich wants. What this would do is, because it is such a wonderful plan, supposedly, it would allow homeschool or private school folks to opt in and choose to participate if they wanted to, but it would not dismantle the mandatory nature from the way I'm reading it. So, I mean, it's it allows opt-in from these, because it is about school employees, supposedly, and these two groups do educating, and but it doesn't force them into the plan. It just allows them to join if they want to.
Okay, Representative Tan.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's a complete example of the problems of adverse selection. The people who really needed it and who would have very high expenses would be the likely ones to opt in. The people who had other coverage or who didn't would be the ones who would not. And that's the kind of thing that we try and avoid in all insurance plans.
All right. Okay, any further discussion? Clerk, take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Cornish?
Aye.
Earhart?
Yes.
Finstead?
Yes.
Groffalo?
No.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hausman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
House?
No.
Huntley? Yaros?
No.
Junkie?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Cole?
Aye.
Lincheski?
No.
Leader?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Ochremba?
No.
Paymar?
No.
Polowski?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Rukavina? Saylor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Sertich?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Goldberg?
No.
Wiggum?
Yes.
Thiessen?
No.
Wagenius?
No.
Walker?
No.
Westrum?
Yes.
Sure.
Convene 29 noes.
No,
24. Excuse me, 24 noes and 10 yeses. Motion defeated. Now I have amendment H046, 4A3, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A3 amendment, and members, just as we have the opportunity in our own health plans to decide whether we want to stay with the health plan from year to year, the charter school has been brought into this as part of the overall plan, and I'm giving them an opportunity to opt out, and it's pretty simple. And, Mr. Chair, I'd like to have a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Sertich?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I encourage a no vote.
Okay, any further discussion?
No.
Okay, clerk will take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Cornish?
Aye.
Earhart? Benstead?
Yes.
Groffalo?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hausman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Haus?
No.
Huntley? Yaros?
No.
Junkie?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Coles?
Yes.
Benchesky?
No.
Leader? Mahoney?
No.
Mariani? Murphy?
No.
Otremba?
No.
Paymar?
No.
Wolski?
No.
Steffen?
Yes.
Hoppy?
No.
Rukavina? Saylor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Sertich?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Solberg?
No.
Swigum?
No.
Thiessen?
No.
Wagenius?
No.
Walker?
No.
Westrum?
Yes. 24 nays and 10 yeses. Motion is defeated. We now have H046-4822, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, I know I'll move the amendment.
Motion is before us, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, this amendment is less restraining than the other one on insurance caps. The original amendment was 3%. I had some people that said that was a little too constraining for them, and when you've got to the point of double-digit increases, I think that's certainly a lot. And so if we put a 10% cap on this plan, as wonderful as it is, it's not supposed to have a lot of increases. So I would assume that 10% would be way beyond what the increases might ever be. But I think that by writing this into the bill, we'll just give some guarantees to our teachers. It's really a pro-consumer, pro-teacher idea, and I think that we should write it into the bill. Some people felt 3% might have some type of problematic situation with the bill, but this one we're going up by over 3 times the amount on the cap, and so I don't see why people would not want to have this one. They'd have to give me some specific reason why 10% is too constraining for this plan when it's going to have all the wonderful features. I'd ask for roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested. Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I encourage a no vote.
There will be no further discussion. Take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Cornish?
Aye.
Earhart?
Yes.
Benstead?
Yes.
A1.
Groffalo?
Yes.
22.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hausman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Haus? Huntley? Yaros? Junkie?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Cole?
No.
Franceschi?
No.
Leader? Mahoney?
No.
Mariani? Murphy?
No.
Otremba?
No.
Pamar.
No.
Plowski.
No.
Pepin.
Yes.
Poppy.
No.
Rukavina. Sailor.
No.
Seifert.
Yes.
Sertich.
No.
Sertich.
No.
Severson.
Yes.
Simon.
No.
Solberg.
No.
Wiggum.
No.
Thiessen.
No.
Wagenius.
No.
Walker.
No.
Westrom.
Yes.
If I get up to 80%, I don't know.
Okay, we have 22 no's and 10 yeses. Motion is defeated. Representative Seifert, you have H.O. 464A13.
Is it 2-3, Mr. Chairman?
No, 1-3. A13. It's the one that you're asking for deposits.
Oh, Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll move the amendment.
Has been made.
Mr. Chair, I'd have an oral incorporation to make a 1.3 to say 150 million rather than 200 million and incorporate that within.
Okay. That's incorporated in the amendment, Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, this is in relation to the testimony the Department of Commerce gave in relation to needing full reserves. I don't know exactly where this comes from in terms of the money, but someone has to guarantee their reserves to be able to pay out in case you have lots of claims coming in, and Commerce has testified to that specifically. We still have not heard from Representative Sertich specifically where the reserve money is coming from. We have $4 million now of startup costs for this board, but no one has specifically told us. Representative Garofalo tried repeatedly to find out earlier, where is the reserve money coming from? Is it coming from the school boards that have money, supposedly, when I think Representative Greiling, wherever she is, would say that a lot of them don't have any money? Is it coming from the teachers' premiums? Is it coming from the state treasury? Representative Earhart's bet is on that one, I think. Is it coming from the money tree out behind the Capitol? Nobody has had an answer, but I think we do have to make sure that whatever the answer to that question is, that reserve money, as requested by Department of Commerce, is in existence somewhere, or we're just all fooling ourselves here. You have to have adequate reserve money. And I would ask for a roll call.
The roll call has been requested. Representative Sertich?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This board may come up with fully insured plans, self-insured plans, or partially insured plans, and so this would, I believe, restrict that in nature. I'd encourage a no vote.
Okay, any further discussion, Representative Coles?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sertich, I had a conversation a half hour or so ago. I know there are a handful of school districts in the state that are currently self-insured. Those school districts have reserves. In fact, I know that the woman who from the Rochester School Board who passed out her written testimony, they've got approximately $9 million in reserve today. What happens to that money, Representative Sertich, if they're forced into this plan? Does that reserve follow into the plan or not? Because I can tell you that representatives from Education Minnesota have indicated to the Rochester School District that, in fact, it does. And I hope that that's not the case. But if you could let me know if that's what the bill either does expressly or if that's what it's intended to do, if you could help me understand that, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no. Education Minnesota has not represented any claim to Rochester's reserve or any other reserve at any time. That reserve will have to be kept in place for a considerable period of time to pay runout costs associated with the existing plan. And then it's my understanding that under current law, the unused reserves revert to the benefit of those who built it. There is nothing in this bill that makes any claim on any existing reserves.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Johansson, or Representative Sertich, I just want to make sure that I understand that that's the intent of. I understand you're saying that's not in the bill, but is that the intent of the legislation as well? That it's not. If the school, let's say Rochester has $9 million, after things run out, there's still $7 million that that money would revert back to the Rochester School District and be distributed, however current law or practice would intend for that to happen.
No, I didn't.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, that is my intent in this legislation.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then the clerk will take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Furnish?
Aye.
Earhart?
Yes.
Stinstead?
Yes.
Croflow?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hoseman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Howes?
No.
Huntley? Yarrows? Junkie?
No.
Hahn?
No.
Foles?
Aye.
Lanchowski? Leader? Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Bochirimba?
No.
Damar?
Yeah.
Pawlowski?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Bukovina? Sailor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Erdich?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Solberg?
No.
Swigum?
Yes.
Thiessen?
No.
Wagenius?
No.
Walker?
No.
Westrom?
Yes.
There being 20 no's and 12 yes's, motion is defeated. We now have H.O. 464820 by Representative Instead. Representative Instead?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move that, then I'll ask for a roll call.
Motion has been made. Roll call has been requested. Representative Instead?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment should be very simple to accept and vote for. It is an amendment that just adds a little bit more language in the bill that protects both the consumer and the taxpayers of this state. You know, we are looking at a bill that's forcing over 200,000 Minnesotans into a plan. So this amendment just says the least we can do is that if it's offers that if the plan is not fully insured, that the board must have assets that equal or exceeds its liabilities. Again, this protects the consumer, protects the taxpayer, and it applies the same standards that are used to other insurance companies that offer products in the state. So I'd ask for support.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd encourage a no vote. Similar reasoning as the last one.
Okay, any further discussion?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Representative Surge did not give a reason for the last one.
No, actually, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Swigum, I did. When you're looking at the different plans that may be offered from fully insured, self-insured, partially insured, I hope they maintain that flexibility when they're working with different vendors.
That's correct. There was the three previous ones, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, to that point, we're not saying that we're taking away the flexibility. All we're saying is let's have a little protection here to make sure that we're covering the liabilities that are out there. It has nothing to do with hampering flexibility. This is just purely something that we're not only doing to protect the 200,000 people that you're forcing into this plan, but we're also protecting the state treasury, as Representative Earhart raised his concern. So it has nothing to do with the flexibility issue that you raised, Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair, members, I refer all members of the committee back to page 3, line 13 through 15, talking about the board must include claims reserves, stabilization reserves, reinsurance, and other features that will result in the long-term stability and solvency of the health plans offered.
Any further discussion?
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Cornish?
Aye.
Earhart?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Instead?
Garofalo?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hausman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Howes?
No.
Huntley? Yarrows? Junkie?
No.
Hahn? No.
Coles?
Aye.
Lanchowski? Bleeder, Mahoney, Mariani,
no.
Murphy,
no.
Otremba,
no.
Hamer,
no.
Pulaski,
no.
Pepin,
yes.
Poppy,
no.
Rukavina, Thaler,
no.
Seifert, Seifert,
yes.
Sertich,
no.
Severson,
yes.
Simon,
no.
Solberg,
no.
Swigum,
yes.
Keeson,
no.
Wagenius, Walker,
no.
Westrom,
yes.
I vote no.
Okay, being 22 no's and 11 ayes, motion is defeated. Representative Seifert, HO464823. This is your premium increase at 25%.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the amendment.
The amendment has been moved, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, I think this is my last amendment. Members, we had people voting no on a 3% cap of health insurance premium increases, 10%. This one is 25, I would say. I picked up a little support on each one of these, and I would think now that 25 being a ludicrously high number, that we'd be able to put this on unanimously. When you're having school districts asking, you know, what's the maximum cap you might have on a bill like this, I would think that 25 would be something that you can at least email your teachers back and say, you know what, we put it in the bill. 25 is not going to at least go up more than that, so Representative Otremba can go to her constituents who have had 31s and say at least we're going to chop the increase down by 6% or what have you. I think it makes more sense for people now at this rate because it is so high that we're going to at least try to constrain the high-end growth, which is what the whole idea of this bill was to start with, was we were going to take the peaks and the valleys and try to have peace in the middle ground somewhere, and this is the middle ground, I think, that would make sense to most people, and I'll ask for a roll call just to make sure. I'm sure everyone wants to vote for this, but we'll just ask for a roll call just to make sure. And I'd like a specific reason why this one is not a good idea, other than just vote no.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Seifert, I've got about 800 Education Minnesota members in my district with a college and 8 school districts. But I also have small businesses and individuals and farmers and homeowners and lakeshore property owners and all sorts of other things. This is your idea of health care reform. Would you be willing then on the floor, when the Health and Human Services bill comes back, because it's been vetoed, will you offer this for all insurance packages in the state, all 3 of these amendments? If this is a good idea for our teachers, why wouldn't it be a good idea for everyone in the state?
Well, Representative Dunk, you have to answer the question for me. Why is it a bad idea?
So you're not going to answer my question, Mr. Chair?
But the answer is no, I'm not going to offer it to HHS bill, Mr. Chair, but I need someone to explain to me why this is a bad idea.
Well, and again, Mr. Chairman, 2 reasons to that. Number one, Representative Swigum, I agree with him 100% on this, and he's right, this throws the actuarial soundness out of any health plan. And number two, it's a poison pill, Representative Seifert, unless you can tell me any insurance company in the state that will abide by this and offer to take their plan with this pool. Well, Blue Cross Blue Shield or Allina or Health Partners or anyone else with this restriction work with our school districts to offer any insurance. And if you can say yes, then I suppose this is a good deal. But if you can't say that, then these are all poison pills to this amendment and will not help my 800 teachers at all.
Representative Dunn.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seifert, I find it real easy to vote against an amendment when the author of it uses the word ludicrous to describe it.
No, I didn't, Mr. Chair, I wasn't describing the amendment. I was describing the increases that people were bringing up earlier. But Representative Junkie, I'll take your arguments at face value, but we have people saying that this bill is going to solve all of these problems. This is just helping solve the problem they claim to be doing in the bill to help it along.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none then, clerk will take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark? Clark?
No.
No. Cornish?
Aye.
Earhart?
Yes.
Vinstead?
Yes.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Heckbarth?
Aye.
Houseman? Kilty?
No.
House?
Aye.
Huntley? Yarrows?
No.
Junkie?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Coles?
Aye.
Winchesky?
No.
Leader? Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Otremba?
No.
Hamer?
No.
Pawlowski?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Poppy?
Pass.
Rukavina? Thaler?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Sertich?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Solberg?
No.
Swigum?
No.
Thiessen?
No.
Wagenius?
No.
Walker?
No.
Westrom?
Yes.
Okay, being 20 noes and 12 yeses, the motion is defeated. We now have an amendment by Representative Westrom, H.O. 464A29.
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw that amendment.
Okay, the amendment has been withdrawn. Now we have one by Representative Finstead, H.O. 464DE3. Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment goes back to what Representative Garofalo said hours ago about the questions regarding putting the teachers in the plans that you and I all share. If pooling and purchasing power through numbers is a good thing, then this should be something then that would make a better product for the teachers of this state and then also for us sitting around this table. So I would ask for your support and ask for a roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested. Any further discussion? Representative Seifert, did you have your hand
up? Mr. Chair, I'm kind of wondering why this one would be a bad idea. Can someone ask why the school teachers of the state shouldn't have the same type of health insurance that legislators enjoy? Can someone explain that to me?
Representative Sturge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seifert, perhaps you were out of the room earlier when we discussed this issue. There is an issue of federal funds that we may lose. There's a portion of law that says that state employees and local union governments can only be used if they're a de minimis portion of a pool participant. And so this is something that I've always looked at and thought might be a good idea, but I don't know if it legally can happen or the potential loss of funds. So it's that reason that I would not support this. It was the discussion we had earlier with Representative Garofalo a whole 3 hours ago.
Representative Vincent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sertich, you said this: we may lose federal funds, or do we know for sure? And how much?
Yes. Mr. Gahan.
Mr. Chair, in the briefing that I mentioned earlier, David Haugen from the Department of Employee Relations and Mr. Carlson, I can't remember his first name, simply said it wasn't allowed because of this de minimis rule of non-employees in that pool. So it's based on their information.
Representative Finstead, are you?
I think Representative Garofalo had.
Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, and we're next. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, when we had that discussion previously, I left the room to go see the school group, and I was stopped by somebody who told me that there are actually people who are non-state employees who actually buy into that plan right now. And I'm wondering if you could just... Oh, Mr. threw a softball for Representative Surge because he's on top of that.
I know one. Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, de minimis is the key word. You would be putting 200,000 people into a pool of about 120,000, and that's not a de minimis number. There probably are individuals or smaller groups, but it doesn't reach the definition of de minimis. This would more than double the pool.
Representative Garofalo. So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Surge, I hate to ask this question. Do we have a rough number of what de minimis would be? Because again, the way this has been marketed is that for the smaller districts where they had the cancer treatment or the kidney transplant, it would seem that if we just maybe instead of grabbing Lakeville, instead of grabbing Farmington and Randolph, if we take the districts that are in southeastern Minnesota or other parts of the state, have them be part of this plan, this would seem like a reasonable compromise. But we're not forcing other districts into that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I do not know what that number is. I'm sorry.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Sirdich's answer was totally correct, that doubling is clearly not de minimis. But I remember this issue coming up several times and places, and the groups were when Fairview Hospital merged with the University Hospital merged with Fairview, and we were having this discussion when we were looking at groups that were merging, you know, 20 or 30 employees or something like that, and it was decided that it was okay, but there was an opinion that those numbers fell within it. But the idea, no one could ever think that a doubling could be de minimis. So.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, the federal funds that play a role in this,
it's not a federal fund, I think it's an allowance. It's the validity of a state insurance plan. It's not. I don't remember it being a federal fund issue. I just remember it.
Mr. Chair, some Garofalo, I believe it's both. There's some federal funds, but it's also not allowed.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment?
We'll do it in
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sirdich, I still didn't hear an answer of how much in federal funding.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, I do not know. But that's just one of the two reasons that I was given. It's also not allowed.
All right.
Okay, all those in favor of the amendment?
Yes,
for roll call. Roll call has been requested. All those are...
Carlson?
Clerk will call the roll, and Carlson, no.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Cornish?
Aye.
Earhart?
Yes.
Simpson?
Yes.
Rockwell?
De minimis. Yes.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hausman?
No.
Hilke?
No.
House?
No.
Huntley? Yarrows?
No.
Junkie?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Holt?
Aye.
Anshevsky?
No.
Leader? Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Otremba? I'm sorry. Yes. Paymar?
No.
Wolski?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Poppy?
Yes.
Rukavina? Sailor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Sirdich?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Solbert?
No.
Swigum? Thiessen?
No.
Virginius?
No.
Walker? Walker? Sorry. No. Westrom?
Yes.
They being 21 noes and 14 yeses, the motion is defeated. And maybe you can get the definition for us. We meet tomorrow morning. I'm a former teacher, so I homework assigned. That's right. Representative Garofalo, you've got the next amendment. That's SO276A12. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is our last amendment, by the way. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, first let me thank you for the excellent job of climate control in the room today, because I like the room nice and cold, and it is nice and chilly, and I love it today.
I noticed you've shared your coat.
Yeah, but seriously, I love it. That's great.
I like it too.
Mr. Chairman, before I move the amendment, Mr. Chairman, Representative Sturridge, on page 4, subdivision 7, can you please cover for me what I think this subdivision wants to do and what it's saying are two different things. Can you clarify for me what you want this to say?
Mr. Chair, Representative Graffel, I didn't hear which page and line number.
I'm sorry. Mr. Chairman, Representative Sturridge, on page 4, subdivision 7. Lines 10 through 12.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, we're getting close to session time. I want to make this a lot easier. Representative Garofalo, if you move your amendment, I'm accepting it.
Mr. Chairman, I move the amendment. Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. We now have the bill before us. There's no further amendments at the desk. Representative Foles.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sertich, I had handed you a note. I haven't passed out an amendment yet, but this relates to the issue with Representative Westrom's amendment and my concerns about the Fair Claims Practices Act applying. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it or not. I'd like to offer it, but I know this has another stop, and I'm willing to wait until we get to the floor, but I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it, and if the language looks like something you'd be willing to accept, if we'd get a copy quickly. I don't think it would be a big deal to do it quickly now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, I did take a look at the language. I've been engaged in all the other amendments. I haven't had time to look at it or talk about it, so if you wouldn't mind, I don't want to commit one way or another, but we will discuss it on the floor, I'm sure.
Mr. Chair, I hope that when we get to the floor, we will make sure that the people under the plan have the protections of the Fair Claims Practices Act. I won't offer the amendment at this point in time. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Cornish.
Representative Sturridge, Mr. Chair, we're all done with amendments, right?
That's right. I hope so.
I'm kind of forced into voting for your bill, and I'm hoping that sometime between now and 10:54 that you can put some more fiscal and policy accountability into it, because I really have a problem. But I'm getting a yes vote out of frustration, because last night I spent probably 3 hours on the phone with my reps from the district unions and I've got 4 schools that really want it and 3 that really don't. I got one that's getting really low rates, and so to force it on the minority is really tough for me. And so if there's something that you can do, and Education Minnesota can do, and I'm really kind of voting for the teachers today. I want to make that clear. I'm not going warm and fuzzy with Education Minnesota, but I like teachers. And I, out of frustration, I'm just trying to do something year after year after year. As a state employee, for 22 years, I've paid all the way from $11 to a max of like $170. And so to expect these people, it could even be a bigger pool, to pay more in the territory. So, but I really think right now it's a crummy bill, and I hope you improve on it, so thank you.
And we have Representative Seifert. Representative Seifert, your hand is up.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was looking at the sheet on the bill on the top on the stops this is made, and I see on the front page creation of board and all the board's duties, and Representative Pawlowski had the rules out here about a month ago saying anytime a board is created, the GovOps committee by rule is supposed to see it. Representative Conn, is that not right? I know you were a stickler with that, but if you create a board or commission, that the GovOps committee has to have the bill. And I wanted to ask Representative Pawlowski if this is an old engrossment and that maybe his committee did see this.
Representative Conn or Pawlowski, I'm not sure. Representative Pawlowski, you're the chair of the committee.
Mr.
Chair, Representative, we did not see it, so
we have a hearing tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, you know, Representative Junkie made a good point here a few weeks ago when we had the whole back and forth and atrazine and whatnot, that we should respect the chairs, particularly if they're willing to give a bill a hearing. Representative Rukavina did that in the smoking ban. This committee made the decision to send it to his committee. He promised to give it a prompt hearing. He did, even though he was against it vehemently. And I'm going to make a higher motion to re-refer this bill to the GovOps committee. I don't like the idea that we are blatantly violating the House rules on this. I understand it's a priority for the majority leader and the majority caucus. This is not to throw sand in the gears. It is to not violate the rules of the House, whether it was Representative Tingelstad, Rhodes, Kahn, whoever was chair of GovOps, as long as I have been in this legislature, has been very particular about abiding by the rules of the House. And if Representative Pawlowski gives it a hearing tomorrow, takes a look at this board, makes sure that it fits within everything, I don't see what the problem is in relation to that. So I would make a motion to send it to the GovOps committee, and I'd ask for roll call.
Okay, motion has been made. Roll call has been requested.
And why not? I mean, what's the problem? Representative Kahn, I've talked about some of this privately in other bills, but if you have a willing chair and time to do it, why wouldn't you follow the rules? Maybe Representative Sertich could tell us why you wouldn't follow the rules on this.
Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Stafford, to my knowledge, Representative Pawlowski has not asked for this bill yet. It's not a matter of following the rules or not. If this motion passed, so we'd have to bring this bill through the Rules Committee to suspend the rules past deadline in a policy committee as well. So, to my knowledge, Representative Pawlowski has not asked for the bill yet. So, that's my reason.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the GovOp jurisdiction is a little strong. It's like taxes and appropriations decision jurisdictions. It is stronger than this kind of jurisdiction saying this refers to energy on one page, so energy should see it, or for agriculture. That is one of the jurisdictions that is done by rules. But as I understand it, this bill can only go to rules. Isn't that true? Mr. Chairman, as I understand it from our deadline, and the only place this bill can go is rules.
You can go from finance to ways and means to the floor. If it were to go to a policy committee, it would have to go through rules.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chair, the motion would be to go to GovOps, and I believe the rules default it to the rules committee, and then they refer it to GovOps. But maybe we could ask Representative Pawlowski. I mean, it's not whether the chair wants to see the bill or not. Like the atrazine one, you could probably make a value judgment on one like that. The rules say if you create a board, it has to go to GovOps. It's not about whether the chair feels it should go to GovOps. The rules say it should go to GovOps. So maybe we could ask Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, I've got 4.13 out. I had it on a good part of session. it's true I didn't request this, but there are a number of bills that have had creations of boards or rulemaking that have slipped past us. So I do concur with Representative Sertich, I didn't request it. However, the issues come up whether or not this creates a board, and I don't know if staff can enlighten me on the type of board this creates, that if this would be a board that would not be under the jurisdiction of GovOps. I'm looking at 4.13, and it says Commission Board. I'm looking under A, actually, on page 21 of the rules. Well, the question, Mr. Chair, might be the type of board that's being created here may not be under the jurisdiction of GovOps because it may not be a state board.
Well, look at 215.
Mr. Chair, and kind of the same point, this is actually a public corporation that's being created. It's called a board, but if you read the statute, it says public corporation. So I don't know if that's if that answers Representative Pawlowski's question.
Mr. Chair, and to Representative Seifert and to Representative Thiessen, it may be why this one slipped past us, because it wasn't a classic board in the sense that we dealt with them before, and then if it is a private board,
that would be something you need.
Okay, any further discussion on the motion? Roll call. Just a question.
Mr. Chair, I guess I would just ask the Representative Walski feel that he does not need to see this bill under the rules.
Mr. Chair and Representative Seifer, I'm looking at page one of the bill. I'm looking at line 1.19 and 1.20. And the sentence says, as provided in section 15.082, the state is not liable for obligations of this public corporation. And then it goes on to describe the board. Unless I get some clarification literally from House Research, I would think at this point, no.
Are you pursuing your motion?
Mr. Chair, I feel that, this has been a stickly issue the last few years. Representative Kahn requested every single bill because the House rules were so specific. I think it should go to GovOps. I'm not going to belabor it. I just think you might as well take the vote, but I really do believe it should go to GovOps.
Okay, clerk will take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Clark?
No.
Cornish?
Aye.
Earhart?
Yes.
Dimstead?
Yes.
Rothlow?
Yes.
Hackbar?
Aye.
Holzman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Howes?
Yes.
Huntley?
No.
Yarrows?
No.
Junkie?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Coles?
Yes.
No. Lynchewski?
No.
Leader?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Otremba?
No.
Haymart?
No.
Pelosi?
Regrettably, no.
Jepson?
Yes. Yeah. Is that counted different?
Poppy?
No.
Rukavina?
No.
Saylor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Sertich?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Simon?
Yes.
Solbert?
No.
Switham?
Yes.
Thiessen?
No.
Wagenius?
No.
Walker?
No.
Westrom?
Yes.
Okay, being 22 noes and 15 yeses, motion defeated. We're back on the bill. Representative Earhart was next on the list. And by the way, Representative Earhart, on your earlier amendment, I should not have questioned your motives, and I do apologize for doing that.
Thank you.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have not been paying. I've been paying little or no attention to the governor's vetoes. I haven't read any of his veto messages, and I don't care what he's doing because that's his job to do what he's going to do. But Representative Clark, if you're awake, I want you and others in this room to know that I was one of the two Republicans that authored Outfront Minnesota's proposal on domestic partners. And all of the majority party in this room, except I think for Representative Mariani, voted politics over principle. I know how this side's going to vote, and I expect it better from you. I hope Outfront Minnesota will somehow score your vote on what I presented here. And I'm not going to vote for this bill for other reasons, because I know what my district in the western suburbs are saying about it.
Representative Earhart, I didn't know that you were going to make that statement.
You wouldn't have said
that. Well, I don't know what you said, but so that's all.
Representative Earhart, what I said was that I apologize for earlier my earlier comments about challenging your
motives in offering the amendment, and I wanted to apologize, and then I followed that up by mispronouncing your name, so I apologize for that as well. And it's just been simply a long morning, and we now have the bill before us and Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, I'll be very quickly, and I'm not going to ask for a roll call, but I do believe that custom and usage is that this bill has been in the K-12 committee, which is a division of this, and I'm moved to refer it to K-12 finance. Representative Sikora had the bill. I don't know if it ever got a hearing or if it kind of got jammed there. But this clearly has school employee, school districts, teachers mentioned, littered throughout this bill. And for us not to have the K-12 committee, either policy or finance, I'm not going to make any more motions. I'm not going to ask for a roll call. But the reality is we all know this bill should have went to GovOps, and we all know it should have went to K-12. We have time to have them take a look at this and allow the school districts to give testimony. I don't think there's been adequate testimony of school board members from all over the state saying that they wish that there'd be more opportunity to sound off in a K-12 committee. This is not the expert division on K-12. It's the finance committee, but I'd make that motion and just plead with members to give them a chance to review this bill. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, any further discussion on the motion? Representative Surridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Representative Seifert, once again, sorry you missed the first part of the meeting. We discussed that issue a bit. Representative Greiling did not request this, or other members. Members, unemployment insurance for Northwest Airlines employees did not go to the Transportation Committee. This issue deals with insurance. And members of all sides of this issue dealing with education have been at each and every hearing and have had provided testimony.
And Representative,
Chair, I ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Walker, were you on this point?
Not on this point, Mr. Chair. I'll wait for a moment.
Okay. Any further discussion on the motion? Okay, the clerk will take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark?
No.
Cornish?
Aye.
Earhart? Earhart?
Yes.
Simstead?
Yes.
Ruffalo?
Yes.
Hackbar?
Aye.
Hausman?
No.
Filthy?
No.
House?
Epstein.
Huntley?
No.
Yarrow?
No.
Junkie?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Holt?
Aye.
Winchesky?
No.
Leader? Mahoney?
Nay.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Ochirmba?
No.
Hamar?
No.
Plowski?
No.
Pepin?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Rukavina?
No.
Sailor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Surtage?
No.
Severson?
Yeah. Yes.
Simon?
No.
Colbert?
No.
Swigum?
No.
Thiessen?
No.
Wagenius?
No.
Walker?
No.
Westrom? Westrom?
Yes.
Okay, we have 25 no's and 11 yeses, so motion is defeated. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief, because some of my members wanted me to not say anything because it's been so late this morning and we have to get going. But as a district that represents half of it being my housemate who did pass today as the only open lesbian in this body, and as the my part of the district that I believe has the largest open GLBT community in the entire state, to say we're playing politics on passing something like this, I follow my policies very well. I'm from a district that you can't catch me on pretty much anything. I can pretty much explain to my constituents how I voted on pretty much any way that I voted. On a particular domestic partners, my folks haven't come to me and said, Neva, we want you to vote on this one in particular. However, my constituents have been very clear to make sure we pass a clean bill that needs to be still worked on, in my opinion. However, my constituents who are teachers, who have called me or emailed me on this particular issue, asked for the support of getting this bill through this committee, and I'm going to follow my constituents today.
Mr. Chairman, I direct members, and particularly Representative Lincheski, to page 6, subdivision 5, We're creating a new tax on the Minnesota School Employee Insurance Board under Section 62A662. It is different than the current tax that we impose on health service plans. Mr. Chair, members, I move that the bill be referred to the Tax Committee and request a roll call. I don't know how we can avoid a stop there, unless Representative Sturdivant tells me that it's already, if it's going to stop there already, I guess if that's the plan or the route we're going to go, I'll withdraw the motion. Otherwise, I think it has to go to taxes. I don't know how we can avoid it.
Representative Sturdivant. Mr. Chair, members, I believe this tax is paid by all insurance plans in education right now. It's just rolled into their premium, so it's not a new tax. It's just paid in a different way.
Mr. Chairman,
discussion on the motion,
Representative. Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd ask Representative Lencheski. I mean, it looks like we're taxing a new entity, and we're taxing them at a different rate than what exists for other health insurance plans. I don't know how, Representative Lencheski, we avoid this coming through your committee. There's a tax policy issue there. Does this bill need to go through your committee, Representative Lencheski?
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just seeing it right now, Representative Coles, for the first time. I mean, I guess I'll take Representative Sturdivant at its word that he's just dividing up the tax differently. Is that correct, Representative Sturdivant?
Mr. Chair, there are currently self-insured school districts that don't pay the premium tax, I believe, and now if we force all 200,000 lives into this, we are taxing people who aren't currently being taxed. I think that it, and we're taxing at a different rate than what we tax other plans. To me, that there are two policy questions. There are tax policy questions that should be considered by the committee. I again request a roll call. I urge member support.
Okay, roll call has been requested. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, just briefly.
Representative Junkie.
No reason to go to taxes now. You can go to Ways and Means, because either Ways and Means or taxes is a route to the floor. So I'd ask you to vote no, and then the chair of taxes and the author can talk about it, and if it needs to go to taxes, it can go there after Ways and Means.
Okay, any further discussion? Clerk will take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Clark? Clark?
Are we on the bill?
Yeah, no.
No. Okay.
Re-referral to taxes so that everybody's informed of
it. She said no.
No.
Cornish?
Aye.
Gerhardt?
Is this the bill?
No.
Members, I know there's some side conversations, so that everybody's clear, this is a motion by Representative Coles to re-refer the bill to taxes, and he requested a roll call vote.
Earhart?
Yes.
Pinstead?
Yes.
Groffalo?
Yes.
Hackbar?
Yes.
Holzman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
House?
No.
Huntley?
No.
Yarrow?
No.
Junkie?
No.
Hahn?
No.
Holt?
Aye.
Lencheski?
Yes.
Leader?
Uh-huh.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Otrimba?
No.
Tamar?
No.
Flowski?
No.
Tepper?
Yes.
Poppy?
No.
Rukavina?
No.
Thaler?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Sertich?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Solberg?
No.
Swigum?
Yes.
Keeson?
No.
Virginius?
No.
Walker?
No.
Bestrom?
Yes.
Okay, we have 24 no's and 12 yeses, so the motion is defeated. We are now back on the Sertich motion that Senate File 276, the first engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. With that,
thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Meeting adjourned, and we're in session, so everybody should head over right away.